It's time for Twig This Week at Google. Paris Martineau's here. Jeff Jarvis is here. Oh, we're going to do some reminiscing. Poor Paris. We're going to talk about the good old days of ISDN lines and CompuServe. Do you remember your CompuServe number? The Internet Archive just backed up an entire Caribbean island. We'll tell you that story. And all the big announcements for Google about their new Gemini AI. All that and more coming up next on Twig.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
This is Twig. This Week in Google with Jeff Jarvis and Paris Martineau. Episode 763, recorded Wednesday, April 10th, 2024. All the meat was shaken. It's time for Twig This Week in Google, or General. The show where we cover the latest stuff from Google, or General. Paris Martineau is here from the information. Hello, Paris. Good to see you.
Hello in general.
Happy day.
I was about to say, Leo, are you okay? Are you broken?
Yesterday was Confederate Surrender Day. I don't know what today is. I have to check. Today is Eid al-Fitr. It is the National Siblings Day. But that's pretty much it. A holiday recognized in some parts of the United States and Canada on April 10th as Brothers and Sisters Day in Europe on May 31st.
Oh, you know what it also is?
What is it?
Wednesday.
Happy Wednesday. It's also UEFA Champions League quarterfinals.
Never forget that.
It's the release of What Jennifer Did and Unlocked, a jail experiment on Netflix. And the first and second season of Hapless arrive on Peacock. You know, I pay money for this. I should really use this.
Well, who do you pay for this?
I pay a lot of money for this. It's fairly expensive. Forecast, Forecast, the calendar of the internet.
Oh my!
What,
you didn't know I paid for this?
You pay money for this?
Wait a minute. Let me see what
Can't
the pricing
you just Google
is.
What happened today?
Yeah, exactly.
I Googled April 10th, what happened today, and they told me that today was the day the Titanic set sail in 1912, and I paid $0 for that information.
That's actually, why is that not on my forecast? Now I want my money back. $100
a
year.
That was in the past, Leo.
Oh, it's the past. Forecast.
Yeah, you can't forecast.
No, they have
that.
They have stuff that happened way back when. But it's not on. But here's the thing. This is crowdsourced. So I can go in now and put that in. The Masters Par 3
contest.
So
for $100 a year,
yeah, you should do it yourself.
Doing it?
This for me is valuable because I can say things like it's National Pet Day tomorrow.
And who
And that's
cares?
Valuable to you?
Yeah. I don't know why I pay for this. Friday, Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead reboot. Let's see. National Grilled Cheese Sandwich Day on Friday. I don't know. It's
in 1971 on April 10th. China hosted the U.S. table tennis team for a week long visit.
So, what do you enter on this day? Is that what you enter on this day?
I just Googled April 10th. What happened today?
It is.
And I meant to type what happened, but I just put happen with an E at the end.
Here's it is International World Baton Twirling Day.
Okay, I got
Tell
see.
Me, Paris. Tell me, Paris, I get my money that you back. Were a baton twirler in high school.
I was not.
Please.
I'm not coordinated enough for that. I would drop it immediately.
National Hug Your Dog Day. But it is International Safety Pin Day.
So forecast is woefully behind. I do know, though, that on Sunday will be the 100th Billy Joel Madison Square Garden concert.
Oh,
nice.
That's a lot.
I saw him at Madison Square Garden.
I think you've mentioned
that. It was lovely.
Before. Yeah.
Big fan.
Neither Jeff nor I have seen him because
Speaking
we're too
Madison
old
Square
for Billy
Garden,
Joel.
Yeah. The D&D live show I've mentioned on this show a couple times, Dimension 20, just sold out Madison Square Garden.
OMG.
It's crazy.
No.
Or I guess mostly it was their pre-sale today. And I was like, I want to see it. So I opened up Ticketmaster 20 minutes before. I made sure I was in the queue. I entered my code. I was 4,700th in line getting there 20 minutes early.
This isn't even until next year.
Yeah. There were thousands and thousands of people lining up to get tickets today.
Who are they?
Group of comedians formerly from College Humor, now under this new banner called Dropout. They've become really popular using Dungeons and Dragons as a vehicle for storytelling. And they announced their first ever U.S. kind of live show at Madison Square Garden of all
places.
They're
doing a podcast.
Wow, that's ambitious.
I mean, now I really feel bad because I've been saying, oh, podcast is suffering, podcast is dying. They're doing their podcast at Madison Square Garden. Clearly, it is a question of haves and have-nots. Some of us are not doing as well as others. That's impressive. Do you think it's bots those tickets, scalping them?
I don't think so, honestly, because I know quite a few people who were waiting for this. The community for this show is also insane.
Oh, yeah.
So it's Dungeons and Dragons. So they sit around the table playing a game. They also have very elaborate sets with little miniatures, and it's really quite well
designed. We've talked about it
before.
And
over the last couple of years, they've started doing sales they'll auction off their miniatures and stuff like that. And they give the proceeds to charity or use them to fund. And people go ham for these sales. Sprinkle a couple years ago sold for $2,000. So I think that people are probably out and about going frothing at the mouth for this.
Well, that's probably why it's bots though, right? Because it's so popular that scalpers know.
Incidentally, Patrick Delahanty points out, it's one of the two big Dungeons and Dragons podcasts out there.
Oh, yeah. This is not even the biggest.
Even the biggest. Critical Role is arguably even bigger on Twitch.
It's way bigger, yeah.
And this is partly why Wizards wanted to clamp down on content from D&D, because they wanted to cash in on some of that.
That's right.
Yeah.
They're using copyrighted materials for their campaigns, right?
Well, technically, the campaigns themselves, the stories, are all
self-generated,
written by the Dungeon Master
it's
and their
the
teams.
The
but they are using rules.
Yeah, they have the book. It says, a 7th level mage can't cast freeze against a 12th level orc without having the Gauntlet of Doom. That kind of thing.
That kind of thing.
I just made that up, but it might be true.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know.
It isn't.
So I might as well go. If I went to this, I might as well be watching a comedy show in Finnish. I wouldn't understand a single joke.
It is. It's like Finnish.
You'd probably actually understand most of the jokes, because it's like they're performing a show live, but they, if you go to an improv show and you see someone doing long form heralds or improvs, they're just improvising with no rules. Beauty of this is they use the rules of D&D to kind of throw a random element of chance into how they're playing the game. So you frankly probably understand most of it.
That sets it. I'm retiring at the end of the month. I just can't. This is
this
it.
Is what did it in?
This is it. It's
some
over.
Comedians having
you did
success.
It. You did it, Paris. You did it to them.
R.I.P.
I hope you're happy now, kid.
R.I.P.
So we have a lot of Google news.
Hello.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. We've got to introduce this strange man who's
we didn't play
on the show
we didn't
with
play
him.
The Craig theme last
oh,
week.
Oh, my God. Who are
so,
you?
I don't care about me, but I just care about the Craig theme.
Ladies and gentlemen,
last
I give
week
you...
we did play the Craig theme. It was after you left,
at
though.
The end, though, after you left, we played it. But I give you now, ladies and gentlemen, the Leonard Tau Professor for Journalistic Enterprise at the Craig Newmark... Graduate School of Journalism, City University of New York, Emeritus.
Everything is in its place. Thank you. That's all. Now go on.
I wonder if Craig, would Craig get mad? Does he call you and say you didn't play my song?
No. But he does watch. He will make references to the show. He watches the show.
Oh, good.
Hi, Craig.
And his pigeons.
And Craig, we want to get you up in the circle again. So remind me and we'll arrange that.
Google had a big event yesterday, the annual Cloud Computing Conference in Las Vegas, and swamped my news timeline with Google News. I don't even know where to begin. I really don't. I'm overwhelmed by it. They showed off Gemini and showed how it can be used to do marketing campaigns and advertisements, how to ward off cybersecurity threats, how it can literally make podcasts that I hope to God nobody would want to listen to, short videos. They announced a new chip. They said it's better than the NVIDIA chip for AI workloads and to control associated rising costs. They announced that Gemini will now be grounded, which doesn't mean they have to stay home after curfew. It means
or that they're wiring it to the flagpole.
No, neither does it mean that. It means that they can be tied to reliable sources of information, which, gee, you would think that'd be one of the first things they would have thought of. They also are, and apparently we don't know yet, but apparently they may charge for this, rolling out Google Search, AI in Google Search, and vice versa, Google Search in AI, which is actually, I already have that in some of the search tools I use. Not those models like ChatGPT that were, you know, kind of set in stone on March 1999 or whatever. But a number of the models I use, you can say, oh, yeah, use the internet, too. And that actually makes a big difference. So a lot
they
of
did
big...
a big deal with WPP, which is putting it, integrating it into its advertising stuff. So it'll be, you know, new jingles coming your way from the machine soon.
Actually, I was very impressed by Sora and its ability to make pretty good music. A couple of our regulars in our club, particularly Chocolate Milk Mini Sip, not his real name.
I don't know. That could be on the certificate.
It's a great name.
Mini is a family middle name. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Chocolate Milk is his first name. Mini Sip is his second name. He made some really cool songs. You want to hear some of them? This is one he's proposing perhaps as our, and I guess we could use this, right? This isn't copyrighted, as our new Google theme. This is Gregorian Synthwave, and I think you'll really enjoy the music, the lyrics of this. Here we go. This is kind of a synth meets Gregorian chants kind of thing. This could be our new theme. Think about it. Just consider it.
This is pretty good.
What's Gregorian about it?
I like how long it is. We have to do less work. I actually love this.
Is this not
I think
the greatest
thing? Our new
this, this is from not Soro. I said Soro. It's Suno.
Lorem Ipsum is also a great podcast name.
Lorem Ipsum. It's the those are the lyrics. This the text that you people at printers and people are laying out stuff put in as
we
dummy
call it
text.
Greek type. Yeah.
Yeah.
I've got a pseudo example that
I got others. Wait a minute. Hold on. I got more.
Wait, can you put this link in the chat? I want to listen.
This is from Suno. Yeah, I will. While I'm doing that, listen to this. Beware of the Frenchmen and their baguettes.
I'm always saying that. Walking down the street, baguettes in hand. Oh, yeah.
With their charm and their accent, they sure know how to. Oh, I clicked away from it. I clicked away from
it. You don't know what they know.
Oh, wait a minute. Let me go back to it. Because I was pasting it in.
I was just getting into it.
I was pasting it in, and I know it was good. This is the first time I've heard AI music actually.
I'm going to give you one that's going to blow you
sound
away.
Sound musical. All right, let me. I've got to find that again and finish it. I totally apologize. This is it. Once again, beware of Frenchmen and their baguettes. Frenchmen walking down the street, baguettes in hand. Oh, yeah. With their charm and their accent, they sure know how to command. Ooh-wee. But don't be fooled by their croissants and their fancy cafes. They might just break your heart and send you on your way. Smooth talker sipping wine along the Seine. This is generated by artificial intelligence.
I hate this, by the way.
Why do you hate it, Benito?
Because it sounds real.
Visual replaced.
It's too real. Good,
yeah.
Don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Isn't that why
yeah,
you hate
real,
it?
Go to line 140. There's no art there because that's a computer.
Here is Cat Acoustic Chillwave Remix.
Benito, you were replaced in all ways.
No, wait a minute. Wait a minute, though. Benito, you're going to like the drop. Wait till it gets to the drop.
Okay, this is great. This is exactly
I
sing to Gizmo.
I don't need you anymore.
Right, I'm leaving. Bye.
No.
Bye, Benito. AI will run the podcast.
That's
now.
Pretty impressive, right? Am I wrong?
Hey, Benito,
very impressive.
Your minimum wage is now $20 at Taco Bell.
Okay,
it's impressive in that it sounds like a real. It sounds like real music.
Sounds like it's not obviously.
My question
the Beatles,
is though, is what is going on behind the scenes here? Because I remember there was some sort of this was obviously before the big Gen AI boom, but a couple of years ago there was a AI based keyboard that wrote all these really funny scripts. It went super viral, and then. What we learned behind the scenes is that like people were kind of guiding it, which is fine. I think it's a good use for it, but I'm curious on this as to what the human involvement was in generating these lyrics and like choosing specific songs.
I'll have to ask Chuck for Milk Mini Sip. All right, what do you got now, Jeff?
141 is one Jason Howell found.
This you did this apparently you already did this on your AI show earlier today.
It's so good. Yes.
This is Suno Music. So I guess you were already playing with it.
Jason was. So he found the one on one.
And Jason's a musician, so
this is so he knows.
Suno version 3. Listen.
Woke up this morning feeling so low.
Now, did Jason say what the prompt was for this?
No. There's no any steps.
Solo acoustic Mississippi Delta blues about a sad AI instrumental.
Like, I don't need my computer singing the blues. You know what I mean? That's for people.
Can computers have the blues is the question.
Well, is this cultural appropriation is the other question.
Absolutely is.
Well, it's all appropriation. That's the key to the whole thing.
Yeah, it all is.
It's
yeah.
appropriating the work of other musicians.
I thought.
SUNO.com. Here's one called Spaghetti. This could be the theme to Curb Your Enthusiasm.
Okay, Leo.
Just kill it, heat olive oil over medium heat, add chopped onion and cook until translucent, then add minced garlic and cook for another minute.
This is an actual recipe.
Tomatoes with their juices, stirring dried oregano and basil seasoned with salt and pepper. Add a pinch of
all right, I want a song called about Cacio e Pepe.
Oh, I'm sure
can
we
can. Can you type it in there?
Sure.
We can make the
Let's make it
sure. Right now.
Italian.
That could be our theme song.
What style? Renaissance?
Sure.
Yay?
What the heck?
What is Italian Renaissance music?
Misspelled.
That's not how you spell
Renaissance.
AI.
It's close. No, there we go.
Yeah.
style, canto about making cacio e pepe, or should I say the recipe itself? Well, let's see.
With the recipe, yes, I think so. Yeah.
Using the recipe. As
it'll be
lyrics.
Short.
Yeah, it's pretty easy. Let's see. Oh, I have to create an account. Well, that's all right. I have a Google account. I don't mind everybody having that account. Continue. Okay. Well, that was easy. Let's see here. Create that sucker. I wonder how fast it is. I have 50 credits, but I don't know how many credits. Couldn't generate that. Song contained artist named Pepe.
Oh, no.
Okay. What does cacio e pepe mean in English?
Cheese and pepper.
Cheese and pepper. Spaghetti. Oh, pasta. Yeah, that's better. All right. Let's see if Pepe. They don't want to use the word Pepe.
Well, now it's just going to
say. Yeah, now it's going to say cheese and pepper. Shake the pepper. Grate the cheese.
Wow. Honestly, that's pretty much got you a Pepe in a nutshell.
Yeah, so why do you need
it? Yeah, it is.
It's actually generating three songs, including Fromaggio e Pepe, A Taste of Italia. Let's play it.
It did Pepe anyway.
Yeah.
It's an opera.
I may never go to Spotify again. Kind of mind-boggling. I mean, that's obviously got a little
effort.
That
was pretty good.
Okay, let's write a theme song for the show.
Should we make a theme song? Well, maybe we'll save that for an exercise for later, but I think this could be... Now, are these copyrighted? Can I just use them as a theme song for a podcast? So did I not say 6 months ago? In fact, Benito,
after your walk,
if you would just make a clip of that so we could play it again and again, things are going to get weird very quickly. Look, a year ago we played computer synthesized music and it was awful, right?
It was crap. Yeah.
It was worse than awful. This is a lot better, faster, right?
It is.
I would like to say a challenge out there, maybe for someone on the Twit staff, maybe for just a listener. I'd really like it if we had a video that was a compilation of all of Leo's wildest proclamations about AI, starting with his description of the walk and, you know, ending maybe with that.
I think I had a dream in the middle at one point. Remember about...
You did have a dream in the middle.
Yeah, we should give them weapons. And there was a whole... Yeah, my epiphany long in coming. And it's been a rich, rich treat. Who does Suno? Is that... it's not Google. This is the thing I get very excited about, is that as hard as the big boys work and all this stuff, it's such a great opportunity for everybody. I just downloaded, I've been looking for a AI that can take my documents and absorb them and answer my questions about that. And I found finally an open source one. It's called Dot, that supports with...
Is this
Alex Pinnell? Alex Pinnell. It's not. There's a commercial Dot. So he does have a problem because there is a. But this is using something called RAG, which is a way of language models ingesting your own content. I'm trying to remember what RAG stands for.
It does this
for.
Locally here, right?
It retrieval augmented generation. So it has the Mistral model, which is a very good open source model to begin with. Has it built in. You download this. It's free. It's available for Windows and Mac. So it already has that model. And then you choose a folder. And it says, what do you want me to know? So I chose my notes folder because it's all in Markdown. It can read PDFs and DocX and XLS spreadsheets. So I chose my Lisp folder. It took a while. It has to chew on all of this, but there didn't seem to be a limit on the number of documents. And it works. But it's all running locally.
What do you have to install it on?
It's Mac, Windows. They have two versions of Windows, one that's CPU bound, but if you have a good GPU, it's better to do that. It supports the GPU using CUDA. The Mac OS is only for Apple Silicon. And it's free. It's open source. And I'm a big believer in open source for this because you don't want the big companies to dominate.
Right.
But I do appreciate the contributions big document companies have made. You can open it on. I'd be curious if you try this, Jeff. Oh, it won't work on your Chromebook. I'm sorry to say.
No way.
But it'd be interesting.
Well, if I were running Linux, eventually. But not
yeah,
yet.
But it'd be interesting to see if you could, for instance, put all of your research for your books, all the books and everything in there, and then query it. I think it'd be very useful. This is like Lambda LM, the Google tool, but it's open source. And that's what to me is very exciting, is that it doesn't require, because there are open source, it, what does require a lot of compute is building the large language models.
Right.
But there are a number of them. Llama from Meta is open, available to use.
Gemma from Google.
Yep.
Mistral.
Mistral. This one uses Mistral, which by all accounts is a good LLM.
Yes, oh yes.
Who does Mistral come from? Do we know?
France. Somewhere in France.
That's the Mistral is the wind that drove.
That's why
Van
it's not
crazy.
Mistral. It's Mistral.
Ah, okay.
I wonder if Mistral is going to have problems because of the recent laws passed in France.
Ah, that's an interesting question. Frontier performance, open and portable technology.
Which law?
Models.
The regulating AI. I'm forgetting what.
Yeah,
the
it's
name
a cop.
That's
basically.
That's the whole EU, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean,
don't think there's a
Mistral
lot of
is
on this.
One of the. I mean, they have restrictions for LLMs.
They were going to restrict open source. That was one thing that was being discussed, and they didn't. In the
thank
end.
Goodness, oh, because that's the future. If you
stupid
ask me.
Would have been stupid as
yeah,
hell.
Yeah. Anyway, you can use Mistral chat on the web if you want, but it's more interesting to download the model and then use it. So they call it their chat Le Chat Noir, the black cat. Mistral, Mistral.ai. I think we are in a very interesting paradigm shift, for want of a decent phrase.
Uh-oh. So when I worked for Delphi way back in the days, you had to put $5 in the jar if you used the word paradigm.
Yeah. I think that's expired now, though. I think you're allowed to use it again.
All right.
Okay.
All right.
I hope so. All right, let's take a little break because I want to talk about Aruba. Jamaica, girl, I want to make you. Our show today brought to you by... Uh-huh. This Week in Google brought to you by Delete Me. This is a product I am very happy with because we use it. We use it because our dear CEO and my wife, Lisa, is like everybody else. A lot of personal information, PII, personally identifiable information, is online about her. And hackers have used it now twice to try to hack our employees. Information they gleaned from data brokers about her, about where she works, personal information that might be useful, information about her direct reports. All that PII online is really appalling. And if you've ever searched for your name online, you know it's out there and it's terrible. But it's not just a concern for individuals. It's a concern for businesses and security. It's also a family affair. You know, if you have people in your family that you want to protect, take a look at Delete Me's exciting expansion for their family plans. You can ensure that everyone in your family feels safe online. And it's kind of important. You know, it's not enough just to delete Lisa's information. We have to delete mine as well. Delete Me helps reduce risk from identity theft, credit card fraud, robocalls, cybersecurity threats, harassment, unwanted communications of all kinds. Delete Me's experts will find and remove your personal information from hundreds of data brokers. By the way, there's new data brokers all the time. That's why you want these experts working on your behalf, because they keep track of all this. They find them and they remove the information, reducing your online footprint, keeping you, your family members safe. But then they do the next big thing, which is really important. They keep scanning and they keep removing your personal information regularly, because that stuff just comes right back. You can assign a unique data sheet to each family member tailored to their online footprint, because everybody's needs are different. Easy-to-use controls mean you can control and manage privacy settings for your whole family under one roof. I think this is a smart idea. This is a good product. Delete Me. Get rid of all those addresses, photos, emails, relatives, phone numbers, social media, property value, and more. And you do need to do it for the whole family because it's interlocking data, right? If they have data for one, they have data for all. Protect yourself. Reclaim your privacy. Visit joindeleteme.com/twit. The offer code TWIT will get you 20% off. Joindeleteme.com/twit. The offer code TWIT will get you 20% off. There are a bunch of reviews on the website you could check out. You don't have to just trust me, but we use it, and it really does work. Joindeleteme.com/twit. What was I going to talk about? I forgot.
Aruba,
Jamaica, girl, I want to make you. Wired Magazine has an article, I think this is really interesting, about the Internet Archive and the Aruba Collection. They have backed up an entire Caribbean island. They are the official custodian of the entire nation's history. This is the first time they've done this. Aruba is small enough that they were able to digitize and store the complete National Library, National Archives, the Archaeology Museum, the University of Aruba, 101,000 items so far, 40,000 documents, 60,000 images, 7 3D objects.
Well, the reason that, Norway is able to create its own Norwegian LLM, as I learned from Sven Sturmer Taulo, is that all the news and all the library is already digitized.
Yeah, in fact, this to get Aruba into the Internet Archive, they had to get everybody to cooperate, right? The libraries and museums, mm-hmm. everybody had to say, okay. The project is funded wholly by the Internet Archive, which I think is great. Good going, Brewster Kahle. I donate monthly. According to Wired, the Aruba project was set in motion in 2018 after Argondizo, who is Stacey Argondizo, who is a Aruba lover and a digital archivist. She's not an Arubian. I wonder if that's right. Aruban? She's not
a Reuben sandwich.
She's not a Reuben, but she loves
Aruba. Thousand Island.
And she works at the Internet Archive, so she thought, could we back up Aruba?
Could we back up?
And they did. She reached out to an information specialist at Aruba's National Library, and they've slowly gotten it all up there. We ran into a lot of roadblocks before we stumbled on the Internet Archive. Archival work can be labor and resource intensive. It's not easy to turn stacks of dusty tomes and fragile decades-old newspapers into easily searchable files. The budget, though, you would think this would be expensive. He says it's shoestring. Didn't cost all that much. Aruba did have its own scanning equipment, so they could use that. Internet Archive provided the software to organize it, including algorithms to decipher handwritten documents from hundreds of years ago. A lot of colonial history on Aruba. So I think this is the first time Internet Archive has done this for an entire country. It did preserve about 90% of Bali's literature back in 2011. Gosh, God bless the Internet Archive.
Truly. Yeah. What a great organization.
And for historians, you know, this is a treasure trove. It's really good. Anyway, I
want to give a plug to my friends at Common Crawl as well, because they're trying to preserve
same thing, right?
Similarly, yeah. You know, they just do text, not images, and they do it so that it's usable as data.
I think there's generally now recognition that we have been putting everything online, but it's ephemeral. Because servers go down and hard drives fail and so forth. So it's great to get it digitized, but the next step is to archive it in a way that it will survive.
It's also missing tremendous perspectives and communities that haven't had the chance to be online enough, haven't had the power to publish all these years. We need to be asking what more we need to add to the web, not lock up behind walls.
Yes.
I mean, if I were one of the AI companies, I would give a bucket load of money to Wikipedia and say, go mad.
Oh, yes.
What all can you do? How all can you increase the diversity of information that we have?
Yep.
And same with Brewster Kahle. What all can you, and Common Crawl, all of them. They're preserving the commons for us.
It's such a small, tiny amount of the federal budget to support this. It would not be billions. It would be hundreds of millions, you know. Maybe
but how
Craig
are we going
Newmark.
To afford 300 extra warheads, Leo?
Oh, yeah.
Give money to things like preserving things online.
Yeah.
Oh, online is evil. Don't you know, Paris? We have to get
it's
rid of
true.
It. It's true. Turn it off. It's ruined mankind, hasn't it?
That's true. Arr. We've got to turn the internet off. It's the only way.
My daughter told me of a new way to get better sleep. And she sent me a TikTok. Have you ever heard of the drunken monkey exercise?
No.
No, it sounds like what happens to me every night.
There's no liquor involved. But I don't know. I'm getting the TikTok in early.
bed, right. And now I'm sleeping better every single night.
He's going to demonstrate the drunken monkey here.
Stupid and
you.
Easy, but get extra blood flow to your extremities so that.
Come on, dance for us.
Easier once you're sleeping. So
watch this.
Here's how you do it. You take a wide stance right before bed.
Yep.
And you go back and forth with your hips.
Yep.
Like this. This is going to loosen your hips up and get blood flow to your legs.
No, that's why you're not sleeping well. And then you do that with your hands.
You're just doing your full shoulder and your full back. So it looks like this. It's really, so this is slow. Okay. I know it looks silly. And you do this for a minute.
I was going to say, Leo, we got to get one of these for you.
And seriously, after 1 minute, you're going to feel it in your shoulders and
I'm
your
doing
hips.
It tonight.
It hurts, but you'll sleep
my
better,
daughter,
I promise.
My daughter does this every night. Just thought we'd have the TikTok video early this week. Yay, Jessica Rosenworcel. I just love saying that name. She says a number of things. First of all, we're bringing back net neutrality, which was dissolved under the Trump era FCC.
That's good news, but there's bad news to follow here.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay. She also rejects calls to impose universal service fees on broadband. Do you think that's bad?
Yeah, because right now people's subsidies, poor people's subsidies for the internet, which is disappearing, is going down. I'm willing to pay taxes for that. I'm willing to pay taxes so that others can enjoy the bounty that we have from the internet that I have. Yeah, I'm appalled. We paid all these years to have 911 service, which we should have. That was a tax on the phone. I think it's perfectly legitimate that we all pay.
It's complicated because remember. The whole thing of net neutrality is the internet a telecommunications service? And the telecommunications services, the phone companies pay into this fund for universal access. You see it on your phone bill every month. On your phone bill. Do you have a phone bill? If you had one, you'd see it on your. Remember the days when you have the universal access
fee? Yes, I do. Yes. You want to make fun of me again? Yes, I do have a phone bill.
So.
Huh?
April 25th, the FCC is going to try to figure out if they can get out of this net neutrality ban and bring it back. But the key on doing this is to make sure that broadband is, we covered this when it happened 4 years ago, that broadband is not a common carrier. In order to make this happen, That they are common.
It's so confusing.
In order to define broadband as a telecommunications service, then they would face common carrier regulations under Title II of the Communications Act. See, Stacy explained this, and I slept through explanation, and I wish I hadn't now. I wish I'd paid attention. At last time, industry trade groups said, no, you don't have the authority to classify us as a telecommunications service. They were that way under Obama. They were Title II. Under Trump, it was changed. The question is, can you bring it back? Here's a question, though. We've had, 4 years since the repeal of net neutrality. Has it gone downhill? Has it been the disaster that we were worried about?
Disaster, no, but I don't know what's happened to prices.
Yeah, I was about to say, I feel like I don't know enough about
we need some research
to be able to
on
say
this.
Yes
yeah.
or no.
Yeah. I mean, in principle, I absolutely support net neutrality. But the fear is, of course, if you don't have net neutrality, that incumbents will make deals like T-Mobile make a deal so that Cox or Time that Max, that's their name. I can't remember their name. That HBO. Oh, no, that Max wouldn't have
it
to
is
pay.
Max.
I know. It's driving me crazy. They can't make their mind up. But anyway, that Max wouldn't have to pay. If you watch Max on your T-Mobile account, you wouldn't have to pay fees. And that's kind of a violation of net neutrality because it's T-Mobile giving Max a leg up over some new service that might be better but wouldn't have that advantage. Customers like that. It's called zero rating. But is one of the many tricks that companies, big companies, use to preserve their incumbency to keep competition down. And it's one of the things net neutrality would ban. It's hard, though, because customers say, but wait a minute, I like zero rating. I don't want to have to pay for max bandwidth, right? FCC's notice of proposed rulemaking, which is pending a commission vote on the 25th, will seek public comment. So it's not going to happen right away on how this might affect Title II regulation and net neutrality rules. Net neutrality rules block blocking, or prohibit blocking, throttling, paid prioritization, zero rating, that kind of thing. So we shall watch with interest. But I do think that it's appropriate, and I want somebody to do the research to see what have been the consequences in the last 4 years, absent net neutrality protections.
Well, and how quiet have they? Maybe they haven't gone full net non-neutrality because they're fearing
to come
back. So they're, look how good we've been. Yeah. How could you think we'd do anything else? Yeah.
And also from experience, this tells me that, like, I lived in the Philippines for a while, and in the Philippines, there's no net neutrality.
No net neutrality.
And what I can tell you about how the internet is there is that the internet is Facebook to everybody over there.
Yeah.
That's it. Right.
There you go. In fact, that was the plan for Facebook's internet for developing nations, remember, is that certain players would get to ride on this Facebook internet, but others would not. And, of course, that just makes the big players win and makes it much harder to compete. FCC has also implemented this Now Nutrition's label. As of today, all ISPs with more than 100,000 subscribers will have to use a label, a broadband consumer label with broadband facts. They did not want this to happen. Oops, I just translated it into Spanish for some reason.
Can you read it in Spanish for us, please?
No. Internet de banda ancha extensa. Designed to provide broadband and nutrition labels is much easier. Designed to provide clear, easy to understand, and accurate information about the cost and performance of high speed internet. If you zoom in on this, you can see it has price, monthly price. It says, is this an introductory rate? The time, if it is, how long it will last?
Good.
Monthly
okay.
price
All right.
after the introductory rate? How long
can newspapers do the same thing and magazines too?
I wish. How long your contract will be, what the additional charges and fees are. This is really good. And there will be a glossary published for consumers so they can understand what these things what they mean. Let me open up the label here. So you can see it. Oh, there you have it. Much bigger. Nice. So here's a sample one for Acme Wired, which is the one I think Roadrunner uses. Oh, no, that's Wile E. Coyote's preferred. It's their, quote, signature gigabit plan. And you get to see all of the additional fees and what they're charging you for and the bundles. This is great. Oh, and what the speeds will be for reals.
Oh, that's important.
Yep.
Asymmetrical fiber, what?
Yeah, what? 1200 megabits down, 1.2 gigs down, but 200 megs up. I would take that, but this is just a made up. There is no Acme Wired, Benito, so don't worry. Is internet access expensive in the Philippines?
No, it's not, because it's subsidized by Google and Facebook.
Oh, right. Do you see ads?
No, but their websites load way faster than everything else.
Yeah, there you go. So you have some experience of what a lot
Oh, yeah. I know what the internet looks like without net neutrality, yeah. And it's bad.
Good. Thank you. There you go. You heard it from Benito. There you go. So we'll watch April 25th. Now, so that's the problem there with this, the universal broadband fees, I guess. Imposing universal charges, service charges on broadband would likely result in ISPs adding those costs to monthly bills. Well, just as the phone companies did, and would make the net neutrality proceeding even more of a political minefield than it already is. Wars and Morsel says, we conclude that forbearing from imposing a new universal service contribution requirements on broadband internet access service is in the public interest. For one thing, we agree with commenters who warn that suddenly and unnecessarily imposing new fees on broadband could pose major upheaval in what is actually a stable and equitable contribution system. Rather than risk this upheaval, says the FCC, we believe it's in the public interest to proceed cautiously and incrementally. You can't disagree with that, right?
No, I don't. Oh,
I think it's clear, though, Congress has to fund subsidies for broadband, and that's what's missing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
It shouldn't be something. Your household income should not correspond to your ability to access the internet.
Yes, absolutely.
How much do you guys pay for your internet in your various places? I weirdly have a very cheap deal. I pay, like, I think it is probably because I bundle it with Verizon, my phone bill, but I pay $20 a month.
What?
For like 300 up down.
Yeah. Do you have the Verizon residential wireless
thing?
I have
Fios.
Oh. It's because you're in an apartment building, probably. And they,
it is, yeah.
Do they require that you pay for it? You probably don't have a choice.
Require that I pay for it?
Well, you couldn't have another internet service provider. Let's put it that way.
No, I could.
You could.
I think my building was originally, I live in like a small brownstone. My building was originally wired for Spectrum.
Oh, okay.
But I'm a Verizon Fios diehard. So I specifically, whenever I move places in New York, I don't move unless I can get Fios or a comparable service because Spectrum is awful here.
Yes.
And so I had them. It said my building was wired for Fios, but that turned out to be wrong because a man had to climb out my window, down the fire escape, into the backyard, and run cables up and down through my neighbor's yards
God
to get
bless
it in my building.
Man.
But
God bless
it worked.
Did
God
your neighbor,
bless him.
Did your neighbor switch to Fios as a result?
My landlady has lived downstairs from me, and they did. Yeah. They were like, man, that guy's been out there for a while. Our internet sucks. We'll switch.
So I paid $307 last month.
Oh my God! Just for internet?
No! That's for everything. That's for the yes. I still have linear TV. That's for a lot of boxes. That's for high speed internet, higher speed gig internet. That's for yes, an old phone line, although not POTS. And that's it. But that's for HBO.
I guess
and
if
Showtime
I include my phone,
that.
I paid $100 last month.
Wow. Yeah, I don't know what my cost is for the
I was
internet.
About to say you probably have
oh, God knows.
25 internet
yeah
connections
I think
in your home
it's complicated let's put it that way it's complicated
Leo did you have a T1 to the home in early days
I had ISDN which was the first high-speed internet you could get it was 100 dual bonded 128 kilobit lines or no it was dual 64 kilobit for a total of 128,000 bits per second. And I felt like, man, I'm living in the future, boy.
Macho,
oh, this
boy.
Is exciting. It was early, too. You really had a phone company really didn't know what you were asking for. You had to find that one person in the closet who said, oh, yeah, I'm the ISDN guy. And they had to get a CSU, DSU unit. You had all this very complicated. And then I skipped T1 because Comcast in Petaluma did At Home early. We were one of the test communities. Fremont was the first.
Oh.
Remember At Home? It was actually a separate company. And
what do you mean Comcast At Home? What's the difference?
Well, it was the first cable internet service, basically.
Oh.
And
was that Excite At Home?
No, this is predates that. It was Milo, what was his name? Anyway, it wasn't owned by Comcast.
Right.
They started in Fremont, and the idea is we could use this cable coax to provide high-speed internet service. And I think Petaluma was an early test. Comcast ended up buying At Home, and it ended up coming from the cable company. In fact, Comcast was pretty forward-thinking. They put a fiber ring around the entire Bay Area so that they could have a fiber to the cable head ends. It was still cable, but they added a lot of capacity.
Milo Medin,
the great Milo Medin. Yeah, he was, I remember Milo very well. And I was very happy to have that. So I skipped T1. I went right to At Home. He's now at Google.
He's now at Google, yeah, VP of Wireless Services at Google.
So he's, I would guess, probably the Google Fiber guy. He's vice president for Access Services. Yep. I remember those good old days. Did you have T1, Jeff?
No, I was not that.
I think, what did we start with at the cottage? We had cable, right, John? Yeah. And then we had a ISDN line for the radio show. You had to get an ISDN line. In fact, the radio show used an ISDN until fairly recently, about 8 years ago. They said, all right, that's it. We're not paying for ISDN. Phone companies don't want to do ISDN. So we're just going to use the public internet and something called Comrex. But it worked. Worked just as well as ISDN. It's a hell of a lot cheaper.
When I'm what is ISDN?
Oh, Integrated Services
Digital. Young lady.
I'm assuming you're going to say you have to like carve something on a big slate with like a chisel. You know, you got to hold up.
It goes back, believe it or not, actually the story of ISDN is kind of intriguing. It goes back to the ambition in the early days from the phone company. They wanted to do movies over your phone line.
What?
Yep.
A movie on my phone.
Yeah.
Could
No.
It? Like
over your
bite?
Phone line.
Over your phone line. You would have a splitter, I guess. I don't know. Bell Labs came up with it in the 80s.
This is over pots, over plain old
over
telephone service.
Twisted pair copper. Phone line. Yeah, copper line. Integrated Services Digital Network. And they thought it would be a business. But they were wrong. So eventually it became data, just data, and that's how I used it. But yeah, originally they wanted to do, what do they call it? Something over dial tone. Movies over dial tone, something like that. They had a name for it. But nobody ever did it.
So when David Eisenberg wrote The Dawn of the Stupid Network in 1998, when he was telling AT&T to stop trying to create smart networks and it's going to be a stupid network, where was that in the progression of ISDN and T1 and all that? Is that fairly late in that process?
Yeah, I think so, because
98?
According to Wikipedia, it was 1980 at Bell Labs that they began work on ISDN, and it was 1988 when the standard entered the Red Book. So ISDN's was around quite a while before then. Eventually did replace T1. T1 was a terrible system. I mean, 1.44 megabits per second. It was not fast. But
the latency was
expensive.
I had a T1 connection in an apartment building
in
like 1998 or something.
Yeah.
And it was so fast, like in terms of latency, like I could play video games, all that stuff.
Yeah. It was 1.544 megabits per second. But of course, in hindsight, 1.5 megabits is 1/100th of what you're getting you're probably getting even more than that. So that's really been a big change, is the widespread availability of relatively high speed internet.
You also didn't need that much speed back then. Like,
right.
You were downloading MP3.
Oh, no. Like, yeah, exactly. Exactly. When I got an ISDN line, 128 kilobits, I was blown away. You know, I could
Napster
download
was flying.
An entire Linux distro in 4 days. It's incredible. So can we come along?
I spent a long time on 300 baud.
Yeah, so
I lived on.
I had a BBS running on 56K.
But like the modem where you put the phone handle on top of the thing itself? Oh,
yeah.
My God.
Yeah.
As long as we're talking old times, Benito. When I first got on CompuServe.
Poor Paris.
That's how you would get on CompuServe. You'd dial the phone number on your phone, and you hear, and then you had suction cups, and you'd put the phone in these two suction cups. Is it called an acoustic coupler? Because the data was being sent by those screeches on the phone lines. So you go,
I used to whistle into it to try to see what I could make it do.
Yeah.
There was a whole hacking community.
Oh, you were trying
freaking.
To hack it?
There was
freaking.
Yeah, freaking.
Yeah, they're freaks, yeah. So, Leo, 71435,1134.
71353136. 75109,3135. It came back to me. Do you know what that
God,
what we're
is this
what we're doing?
Like when I'm is this what it's like when I'm trying to explain?
Do you know what we're
like
doing? Do you know Ferris, what that is?
75109. I have no idea.
3515.
71435,1134.
Benito, do you know what that is?
No, it sounds like CompuServe though.
It is CompuServe. Bingo! Give that man a funny.
That
hat.
Was our user ID.
You didn't have a name. You had a number. Scooter X remembers his 71340,356. The comma's the giveaway. was it CompuServe that was started by H&R Block?
No, that was the source, wasn't it?
That was the source. So H&R Block, which is the tax company then and is the tax company these days, had all these computers to do your taxes. But after April 15th, they didn't get used so much. So they thought, what can we do to use those computers the rest of the year? And they decided to create an online service with the
Prodigy was Sears.
Oh no, who was Prodigy? Who was Prodigy? I'm trying to remember.
Somebody... It was weird that the companies early on who thought they were going to be Sears. I think
it was okay.
I think
it was Teletext, right?
I thought Sears was famously against the internet, and that's what led them to get overtaken by Amazon and whatnot.
The roots of Prodigy
began when CBS and AT&T formed a joint venture.
Videotext.
Fairlawn, New Jersey, where my wife used to live. Videotext, right.
Sears sold it.
A joint venture.
Yep, with IBM CBS and Sears.
And IBM and Sears, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
When I came to Advance Publications in 94, the newspaper industry was still debating whether to put everything up on Prodigy or AOL or this new thing, this web thing.
So Prodigy, Paris, was graphical. CompuServe, Genie, The Source, all of
what
these were just
text.
What
is CompuServe? Are we talking about a messaging system? Is it like bulletin boards?
No, it had news, is stocks, a lot of
before the internet.
Boards.
Yeah, before the internet,
but it
was
all
CompuServe.
Alphanumeric menu based. So you got a menu, number 5 for sports, and then baseball.
And what would show up there? Like you click number 5 for sports, and it would be text describing.
Or a lot of discussion boards.
Oh, okay.
This is that's Usenet News Groups. Let me see if I can find CompuServe.
I was going to say, I know
that's
News.
That's AOL. AOL was graphical.
I know AOL.
Yeah, yeah. This predates all of those.
So when I was at Delphi.
Delphi was another good one. Yeah, there's CompuServe.
We were the first one to provide consumer access to the internet, but only, you know, textual, with Gopher and FTP and all that. And then when Murdoch bought it, we had to have a GUI because everybody had a GUI, a graphical
what
user
is a
interface.
GUI?
A graphical user interface.
This is a
so
GUI.
AOL
this
had
is,
it.
This is CompuServe 2000, which was their GUI-based version of CompuServe.
I love the artistry on that video just there. That was good.
Look at that. Look at that. That's a beautiful thing there. Because remember, we also didn't have very high-res screens. We didn't have a lot of colors.
No.
So this stuff really couldn't look that good.
Monochrome screens.
Yeah.
I mean, this looks great.
This does.
This is Windows 98. So this is.
Paul Ryan, Condoleezza Rice, CNN camera woman assaulted. Those are the hot searches.
The hot stories, kids. Here's the first internet commercial from YouTube. You ready? October 89.
Oh, this goes hard.
If you own a computer, here's how to get the most out of it without buying lots of expensive software. Get ready to write down a phone number and watch this. CompuServe combines the power of your computer with the convenience of your telephone to bring you hundreds of online services, like a set of encyclopedias and the AP Newswire. It helps.
This
you
is incredible graphic design.
Make airline reservations and shop in the electronic mall. It connects you with
this was extremely hard to do back then.
And offers games
extremely
that
hard.
Pit you against opponents around the country. You get all this and more, and it's as simple as making a local phone call. To get online with CompuServe and over 500,000 people throughout North America, see your local computer store or call 1-800-522-4477.
And look at the box they're going to send you. They're going to send you a whole damn box.
First they send you the brochure, then they send you the box.
So Paris, the other thing about this is that blows people's minds is we were charged by the minute.
Oh, it was so expensive.
Of internet use?
Yeah, oh, yes.
Of CompuServe.
And so and all of them. And so I remember when AT&T WorldNet broke that and decided to go to flat $19.95 a month pricing.
Yeah.
That's what made the internet explode.
Yeah.
Because no longer was there a ticket. Jeffrey, are you still on that internet
thing? The clock
thing?
Was ticking.
It's going to cost us a fortune. Oh, yeah.
I played.
How much should it cost? I'm trying to look it up right now.
Oh, I had a huge bill because I started playing a game called Colossal Cave, which was a text-based adventure.
Right,
and I would spend hours on CompuServe till I got the bill. Then, fortunately, my friend who worked at Atari said he could use his account. And so
CompuServe costs $6 per hour at 300 baud, $12 per hour at 1,200 baud.
13 cents per minute.
Yeah, outrageous.
To access the service during the day and 10 cents per minute at night.
Because, what? Again, this was surplus computer time that these yes. big companies were, it was cheaper. You know, if you use it at night, well, we don't really need it that much. So just what a different world we lived in. Let's take a break We now have commercials.
We're going to come back to the present now.
In the present, we have commercials, but we're going to do some actual news stories. We don't have to travel down memory lane, but Jeff and I wanted to tell the youngster a little bit about our childhood.
Now I'm calculating how much 13 cents per minute would be. In
this show would dollars. Cost us.
Are you also doing it with inflation?
And
yeah, that's what I'm
and
doing.
And at 1,200 bits per second. You know, the screen isn't going. Foop, foop,
it took
foop.
A long time, right?
So you're in a hurry, and it's
okay,
not moving
fast. It's the same
fast.
Buying power as 40 cents a minute
now,
which is
still expensive. Yeah,
$24 an hour.
What?
Yeah,
that's more than minimum wage.
That's crazy.
You couldn't work at McDonald's and get online.
If it cost me to be 24, if it was $24 an hour for me to be on the internet when I was a child, I would be. Yeah. My family would be ruined.
Yeah. My Osborne 1 in 1981 cost me $1,700. Calculate that with inflation.
Yeah. It cost you what?
$1,700.
It was a big deal because it was the first computer you could buy under $2,000. I mean, it was a full computer.
And my,
it came
a
with
huge
software.
Deal.
It was a great deal.
Yeah, CPM. And my printer, because I couldn't do a dot matrix because editors would hate it. So I bought an impact printer, and that cost me $2,300.
Well, Apple laser writer.
$1,700 in 1981 is the same as $6,100.
Yeah.
And when we say $7 a month to join Club Twit, you see what a deal. You see what a deal that is.
You cheap
bastards.
We could
be charging you by the minute, and this is a three-hour podcast.
Club Twit, Patrick Delahanty says, costs less than a penny a minute. Think about that. Think about that. Our show today brought to you by, we are no longer sending, in fact, in the old days, when you sent email, you could only send from CompuServe to CompuServe, or from MCI Mail to MCI Mail, or from Genie to Genie. You couldn't send from CompuServe to AOL. They were separate systems. We've come a long way, and email has gotten a lot better, but there are still people who are doing the old Gmail, Hotmail, Yahoo Mail thing. You need Fastmail, the leader in email privacy for more than 20 years, the only email service I've used for more than a decade. It really makes email better. I've said for a long time, if you care about email, why aren't you paying a few bucks a month to get the best? Fastmail is as little as $3 a month, and you get so much. Privacy to begin with. They don't sell your name. They don't sell your information. There are no ads. In fact, with Fastmail's email clients, you can even hide the ads in the emails, which I like. I love Fastmail. Their quick settings on their web-based email lets you choose new themes, switch between light and dark mode, change text size, generate masked email addresses, auto save contacts, set default reminders, all of that without leaving your mailbox. And they have apps for iOS and Android, which are so good, that's all I use. I don't use the built-in apps anymore. I use Fastmail's apps. You can add or buy a domain with Fastmail. Now, this is really important because if you are a business, you want your email domain not to be somebody else's business, but your business name. You can go to Fastmail. You can buy your business name as a domain. They'll set up all the records for you. It also does all of the important authentication that now is required by a lot of email providers, DKIM and SPF and DMARC, all of those things that make your mail go through to the big internet service providers. They set that up for you for free. You pay for email with your privacy at Fastmail. Your data stays yours. You get better productivity features. Oh, and you get support from real people. And it's as little as $3 a month. Very easy to move over. You can keep your old account, have the mail forwarded. You can fetch it with Fastmail. Or you could just download all the old email and import it into your inbox on Fastmail. Fastmail has incredible spam filters that you control if you want. They actually support a scripting language called Civ that I use to do very sophisticated email filtering, forwarding, and spam control. And, of course, no ads. Fastmail works great if you use Bitwarden or 1Password. Bitwarden, our sponsor, or 1Password. Fastmail will automatically generate masked email addresses unique to each account, which is they go into your inbox, but it's an additional layer of security that really works. I can go on and on. I better stop now. But let me tell you, Fastmail is the better email service. It's the only one I use. And if you ask around, if you ask your really sophisticated friends, what do you use? They use Fastmail too, trust me. Try it now, free for 30 days. Fastmail.com/twit. Fastmail. Fastmail.com/twit. Trust me, I've been around for a while, as you now know. Fastmail is the best. It is the email service you should be using. Fastmail.com/twit. Yeah, I have. In fact, I was just looking the other day. I have more than 20 email domains at Fast. I put all my domains at Fastmail. So whenever when I have a website, the email from the, you know, you go to the website, you get the website. That's not handled by Fastmail, but the email is. So if you email something to my website, it goes into my Fastmail inbox, things like that. Just fantastic. All right, let's see. You know what? I've been dominating the conversation. What do you guys want to talk about?
I have a very dumb question that we can do for a minute while Jeff thinks of something we should actually talk about, which is, are you guys inbox zero sort of people?
No.
How many unread emails are on your phone right now? Open it up. We can see who has the most, because I might have the most.
Yeah, yeah.
26,307.
Whoa!
I have 27,750.
I'm just going to bow out of this conversation right now. Because you know what? I don't. My inbox isn't the most important thing. But I probably. I don't know. I've got a ton of them.
Mine definitely isn't the most important thing.
No, I use. I have scripts that are moving mail around as it comes in.
You don't even look at an email. It just goes somewhere.
It does, but a lot of it, it does. That's exactly right. If there's a line in the email that says unsubscribe, I just put it in mailing lists and I never see it again.
That's smart.
I have a lot of filtering going on. That's one of the things I love about that sieve language that Fastmail has. And so inbox, no. I have a travel box. I have a VIP box. One thing I do that's, I think, useful. If you're in my contact list, which you guys are, you automatically go to the important inbox. In fact, there's Jeff's email saying my CGPA analysis paper. What's that all about, Jeff?
That's the California Journalism Preservation Act. I was commissioned by the California Chamber of Commerce to write a paper about it, and I went deep into it. It's legislation that tries to get Google and Meta to pay per link that they link to news organizations, though you'd think that would be the opposite way around.
That doesn't seem like something you would support, right?
I do not support it. I was against it.
Link tax. Leistungsschutzrecht.
The Leistungsschutzrecht. It goes back to the history of the Leistungsschutzrecht, and it goes to the history of the antecedents here. Then it goes through the faults with the bill, of which there are many. Then I look, and I was fascinated by this, the history of the of news and copyright. News was not protected by copyright until 1909. I look at the history of consolidation in California media. The same day in 1962, Chandler and Hearst each killed a paper so they could kill competition.
Wow.
And collusion. They got away with it. I looked at the history of how inhospitable the newspaper industry has been to every new technology and competitor. And then I propose a bunch of alternative solutions to this. Medium says it's a 79-minute read.
Wow. Did you publish it on Medium?
I did put it all on Medium, but that's kind of a ridiculous way to read it. I just put it there. Neiman Lab did an excerpt today of two of the sections, but the whole thing is up on a PDF. So
very impressive, very scholarly summary of... You know what? I think on the surface, if you're a legislator and you're not thinking hard about this, you might say, well, yeah, we got to preserve journalism. And why shouldn't the companies that are benefiting nowadays from journalism be helping to support that? And you make a very
This is literally written by lobbyists for the newspaper and magazine industries. It serves the big old papers. In California, 18 of the top 25 newspapers are owned by hedge funds now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. I don't see why they give them any money.
That's depressing.
Yeah, that is grim.
Yeah.
In effect, they're already dead. They're just dead papers walking.
Oh, yeah.
And
oh, yeah.
So, you know, if you're trying to support them, that's a noble cause, but you're not. They're already gone. You're supporting the hedge funds that are picking on the bones.
this legislation cuts off anybody who doesn't already earn $100,000 a year. So you look at something like Afro LA, which got $15,000 last year, a wonderful woman who's working herself to the bone, trying to support this and do work. Because it only pays for links, which is, of course, ironic, that you would think the link to the paper would be a gift to the paper. But instead, they're trying to say, no, you must pay us for this. Well, a lot of black newspapers and Latino newspapers in the state still depend upon paper. And so they wouldn't benefit from this. It's terrible legislation, just terrible. It made it through the assembly. It's going to the Senate. Illinois has a similar version. I testified before the Illinois Senate and hope that I put one stake in the heart of it there. And then there's a federal version of this called the JCPA, the Journalism Competition and Preservation Act. And so thank you for this chance to. But if you're all into this field, there's a lot of stuff in there. And actually, the history stuff is actually fun.
This is in Jeff's Medium column. It's called Wither News, the California Journalism Protection Act. This is not the way to save news. And actually, you write an article about it or is this the whole thing?
That's the whole thing. I just put it there. Yeah, because it was kind of weird, but Medium let me do it. So I thought, okay, if they want to read it, they should be able to read the PDF. If you go to
Gutenberg
the PDF.
Gutenberg is mentioned three times. I controlled F.
My favorite, so the very first footnote, I defined link tax, and that was much fun to do. I liked writing that footnote.
Nice.
Ooh, do you want to read out your definition of link tax?
Read a part of it. Let's see here. Hold on 1 second. Oh, shoot.
If you wish, I could do it in a German accent. Would that make you happy?
So legislation requiring platforms to pay news corporations is variously and colloquially called an ancillary copyright, link tax, snippet tax, Google tax, or neighboring right. The laws differ in detail. I'll skip forward. My favorite, where is this here? I used a phrase that where is it? Oh, pedantry requires notice that in California's case. I like that. I'm proud of that.
And of course, every state legislature in California, being the literate, intelligent readers that they are, will love that turn of a phrase.
Yes.
And immediately vote properly.
CJPA does not create a tax insofar as the funds demanded of the platforms would be paid directly to publishers, not through the state. But anyway.
That is pedantic. Good.
So this is, in effect, a brief against the California Journalist Protection Act.
So the full disclosure is I was commissioned to do this by the foundation that is associated with the California Chamber of Commerce. They did, in fact, have no input on the content or my conclusions. They were great to work
with. Good. I'm glad you did this. Where did Inbox Zero come from? This was some productivity thing, right?
Anal retentive jerks. Yeah. That's where it came from.
People who have too little control over aspects of their day-to-day lives, so they want to exert it over their inbox and derive pleasure from it.
Hey, I'm Inbox Zero, and I take offense.
Yeah, and how much control do you have over your day-to-day life?
Because you let go of it too long ago, and you cannot clean it up anymore, and that's the only reason you're not Inbox Zero.
Well, you could declare email amnesty, in which you say, okay, I'm throwing everything out. If you sent me an email I haven't responded, consider your email deleted. Start over. People do that too. That's part of Inbox Zero. Is an email? What is it called? It's called an email, not amnesty.
There's email forgiveness day.
Yeah, email forgiveness day. When's that? That's not in my forecast.
That's
either.
A good. When is that? Email debt forgiveness day, April 30th.
Oh, it's coming up.
It
we should
started
have a party.
By Reply All, RIP. If there's an email response that you wanted to send, but you've been too anxious to send, you can send it on April 30th.
Oh.
No, without any apologies or explanations.
Oh, that's different. That's different.
It doesn't matter how long it's been.
For your email. Not
it's forgiveness
for not reading
for your email
it.
Debt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the time you don't have to say sorry for the late reply.
Yes. You just add a link to this page or use the provided email template.
Dig out the email you've been avoiding. Write a reply ignoring the amount of time that's lapsed. Add a link to this page, which is emaildebtforgiveness.me. And they even have a template for it. And then send and enjoy your anxiety-free day.
If the template just says, please forgive me. That's it. That's the only thing that is there.
Please forgive me, but I'm saying.
Okay, so let's ask this.
I have
What's
so
your
much
favorite
that.
Prevaricating lie that you
it
use
went into
to
my spam
excuse
folder.
Yourself?
It went into my spam folder. That's
Paris, what do you use?
The obvious choice.
Sorry, I missed this.
Oh, that's good.
I didn't miss it. I saw it, and I've been thinking about it ever since. I just put it off. I had to use that today. A great local theater production that I love reached out because I guess I'd had a duplicate purchase of a zine they're putting out. And they were like, oh, do you mean to purchase two or did you want one? I saw it immediately. It was like, oh, yeah, I should reply to this. Didn't. I replied today when they reminded me. I didn't reply.
Sorry, I missed this. Is honest.
I said, sorry, I missed this.
That's honest. You're not even, you're just apologizing and saying.
So tell me whether I should open up this email. Message from the Los Angeles Police Department. New message from Sergeant Jennifer Quinn via LAPD message e-portal. Click here to read message.
Okay, I'll
You're
tell you.
You're probably going to be arrested.
I'll tell you why you should read that. There is a very high probability that's a scam or phony.
Yes.
But I did get an email like that from, I think it was the Pasadena Police Department, and it was to inform me, as they are legally bound to do, that one of their inmates had issued a death threat against me. And they just said, you know, we just want to let you know.
They emailed you?
They
for that?
Have to. They're required to. They have to
but
notify
don't they,
you.
Don't they email it as an email? Why do they do this fake? And it's from aperturecvo.com.
Okay, that's the giveaway, the wrong email address.
Yeah.
Although it's easy to spoof an email address. I don't know why they do that.
I don't know why they're too stupid to do it. Yeah.
So sometimes you do get email from other. Other jurisdictions, police.
We got one that looked like an absolute scam called Florida Treasure Hunt.
Well, that's real.
That's real. We just got a check for
lost
my father's. My father had $1,000 coming to him.
That's a bank account they couldn't track him down, or a debt that was no uncollectible, or that kind of thing. Yep. I just got an email from myself saying I no longer use this as my email address. Oh, I've had
email from yourself.
Yeah.
How?
I changed the calendar appointment. Apparently, it says this is the email I sent out. If you try to email my Gmail, I don't use this anymore. Please ask me for my new address. If you're sending this email to anyone other than Leo Laporte of Petaluma, California, you may have an incorrect address. If, for example, you have inadvertently added a space in your address book. For instance, Gerald Space Laporte at gmail.com. This will come incorrectly to me at laporte@gmail.com. Replace the space with a period to fix the error. I get a lot of email in French intended for first name space laporte@gmail.com.
I think that's who's nice. The New York Times tech columnist. I'm suddenly forgetting his name.
Kevin Roos.
Kevin Roos.
No, not Kevin. It was another one.
There's many.
Ezra Klein, not a tech columnist.
Yeah.
Just wrote a column that he's leaving Gmail, and he sounds like your old co-host on Twit. I have a better email. I get no spam.
Oh, Dvorak.
Dvorak. It's one of those horrible things where...
Is it like supercomputer or whatever that... Or
you get, no, you get challenged. Everybody who sends email to him has to...
Oh, God, Ezra, stop.
Oh, no.
Stop. Yeah, he wrote, happy 20th anniversary, Gmail. I'm sorry I'm leaving you. Yeah, well... Goodbye, Ezra. I'm sorry I'm not going to send you any more email. So where
he's
does
subscribed
he...
to Hey.
Oh, he's email using Hey. Okay.
Oh, yeah. I know Hey.
I have a connection to Hey, actually.
Oh.
One of my first employees, Dale. Dane Golden. That's right.
Dane's there.
No. He owned Hey.com.
Oh, you're kidding me.
And he always said, this is my retirement. He said, I get many offers. He said, I get many offers for the domain, but I'm not going to sell it. And just a couple of years ago, David Hanemeyer Hansen and Jason Fried, the people who do Basecamp, who run Hey, announced that they were going to start this new email service and that they had acquired Hey for a not inconsiderable sum. They didn't mention Dane, but I know who got it, and I'm so happy that Dane cashed
in. How much
in.
Do you think he got for Hey?
I hope it was $1 million.
I hope it was $1 million.
It should be. I mean, they really wanted, you know, this is 37 Signals. They were planning a very, you know, big launch for this. This is the one that they got in a battle with Apple over because Apple wouldn't let them put it in the App Store. DHH is, you know, justly famous in the tech world for having invented Ruby on Rails, but has turned into kind of a jerk, as this often happens when you get very wealthy. So I wouldn't use Hey just for that reason. I tried Hey when it came out.
I tried Hey when it came out as well. It too didn't expensive. Stick for me.
Yeah, Fastmail. Yeah. Just use Fastmail. Hey's $100 a year. If you want to use a custom domain name, it's $12 per user per month. You know, Fastmail's a lot cheaper and a lot better. But Hey does have this. So does Hey do this challenge response thing?
I think that's what it says. Maybe I'm being unfair to it, but I just got growly when he.
Yeah,
this is all he says. Oh, I used to use Gmail, but now I'm above that.
He says the first time anyone sends you a message, it goes into what's called the screener, and you have to see, this is too much work. I don't even want to do this.
Yeah.
You have to whitelist or blackball the sender. If you blackball the sender, you never see him again. It has another feature I love: a clean screen for replying to emails, so you can think and compose.
What? That's just called expanding the email draft screen.
I don't want to have to go through my mail at all, let alone say, keep this guy, don't keep this guy. I just don't want to even look at it.
No, exactly.
My filters say, if he's in your contact list, you know him, put that in the important folder. That's good enough. Everybody else.
I'd pay $100 a year for someone to just police me and be like, hey, don't look at that every time I try to open up email.
Hey, stop it. I would pay $100 a year for somebody not to let me look at Instagram, especially in the middle of the night. Yeah,
that's me, but with Twitter.com.
Yeah, Twitter's, it's hard. It has a
gravity. I know that I could download something that would tell me how many times a day on my laptop I open up Twitter.com, but I refuse to know that answer. It's too sad.
And
how many times have I opened up Twitter.com
and you
during
don't want
this show?
You don't want to, right? You don't want to do
it. It's not good. It's not bringing me any joy.
It doesn't. It brings no one joy. Although it did bring me a blue check.
Oh, you're back.
I'm back, baby. Now, I want to be very clear. I did not pay for this.
But 2,500 of your followers did, and that's why you have a blue check.
Yeah,
I got rid of my blue check.
How do you get rid of yours? It? You can turn it back?
You can hide it.
You can hide it, yeah. You're going to
Wow, I didn't get given a blue check. I'm too small of a following with my 17,000 followers. They're all too cool.
They have to be paid followers to count towards that 2,500.
Yeah, you have to have 2,500 followers who are paying for Twitter.
Right. I have Twitter Premium Plus. I have so many paid followers, so...
You go to settings and privacy.
Okay. Hold on.
And then you go to
settings. I can't even figure out how to get to settings. Oh, well, here we go. Set privacy and safety. Yeah. Now what? Learn more about privacy.
I forget.
That's all right. I don't mind having a blue check because it's very clear.
I got rid of it.
On my profile, it says, I don't post here. Follow me on Mastodon. Go away.
But when you do get rid of it, it says, well, other things you do may let people know that you got the $8 schmuck and pay, like don't write long posts.
But it's not an $8 schmuck thing anymore.
Not anymore, no.
They've given it to...
Well, now the schmucks who pay for it are even schmuckier.
Yeah. Yeah, I have very mixed feelings about Twitter. It does have a gravitational pull, doesn't it?
It really does.
It pulls you in even though you don't want to. Do you post? Or just,
oh, I got it.
Leo.
You do. Really?
You go to.
Yeah.
That's all right. I'm premium. Not going to do it. Go ahead. Say it.
Well, let's tell your listeners.
Yeah, yeah.
You go to settings. Then there's one that says premium. And then you go to verification. And then you go to blue checkmark. And then it says hide your blue checkmark, which I've turned on, which is, of course, a double negative. And it says using some premium features could still reveal that you have an active subscription.
Well, that makes
sense. Some features may not be available while your checkmark is hidden.
Yeah.
So I think they took away editing from me because I briefly could edit again, and now I can't again because I think I
hide your blue checkmark. Checkmark will be hidden on your profile. That's funny that they have to do that. I think this, in a way, I see this as Elon waving the white flag or the blue flag, as it were.
Yeah.
Saying, you know what? This was a mistake to try to make everybody pay for their blue check. Blue checks add an important content to Twitter. They make Twitter what it is. We want
well,
those
frankly,
people.
I think part of it is, I mean, actually, I don't know if this is what Elon thought, because I'm not sure if he's making wise business decisions or not. But one thing I've noticed as a result of blue checks being up until now exclusively dweebs who decided to pay for it to look popular is that the replies to every tweet that I actually want to read interesting replies to are just garbage for the first 20 replies because blue checks get put on top. So I just scroll until I get to the no checks. And then there are the funny, witty replies I came to Twitter.com to see.
You have more energy than I do. I don't look at replies.
You just don't use Twitter.
That's really, yeah. There's nothing good ever came of using Twitter. And I don't even mean in the Elon Musk era. I mean, ever. The fights we would get into, the outrage, the regret. Have you ever regretted a tweet?
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
Yeah.
Everybody.
But Leo, so many people got work from Twitter.
Did you?
I was going to say, every job I've ever had is from Twitter.
You're
really?
Kidding.
As a journalist, yes, in one way or another. I mean, I guess my first job was from connections I made in an internship. But then after I got laid off at the Outline, I got 5 job offers from making a good viral I've been laid off tweet.
Oh.
And a bunch of people reach out to me from that. Then when I got laid off from Wired, I got eventually 2 job offers from making another good viral I've been laid off tweet, one of which was The Information.
So your recommendation to everyone is use your Twitter account to announce that you've been laid off and do it in a clever way.
Clever way or a way. I mean, I don't know if it would work that well now because the journalism industry is a hot garbage fire and everyone's being laid off.
Yeah.
But I think that, you know, at the time it was easier to leverage that into potential job offers. I don't know, though. I still feel compelled to post. I need to be back on Blue Sky some more. I like Blue Sky as well.
Like Twitter was also like the main marketing wing for any independent artist.
Have you gotten jobs, yeah, Benito, through Twitter?
Not jobs, but that's where I would pitch any of my own personal projects and stuff like that. And that's where I would get traffic from that.
I certainly did in the early days. I got on Twitter in 2006 and used it a lot in the early days. But I also got in a lot of trouble. I got in Twitter feuds with a number of people, including Dvorak. And I kind of regret.
That was not hard to do.
No, it's very, that's the thing. Twitter, it's easy to get in a fight on Twitter. It promotes that kind of thing, right? All right. Moving on. Any other Twitter news? I got some TikTok news.
Oh, yeah, there
news.
Was something in here. We had some Twitter news. We had some Musky news. What was it? So Twitter's clumsy pivot to X.com is a gift to fishers. I didn't understand this, but I figured you could in a second. Line 87.
I'm going to guess it has to do with domain squatting and domains that sound like X.com. Let's see. On April 9th, Twitter began automatically modifying the links that mentioned Twitter.com to read X.com. Oh, that's terrible.
Yeah, so explain why.
But over the 48 hours, dozens of new domain names have been registered that demonstrate how this change could be used to craft convincing phishing links. So if you wrote a link that is FEDETwitter.com, Twitter reforms that to FEDEX.com, as in
no.
FedEx, and suddenly that link looks real. At least 60 domain names have been registered, according to Krebs, over the past 2 days for domains that end in Twitter.com. Although, he says, research so far shows a majority of those registered have been done so defensively to keep people. Let me think. Is there anything? Is there an X? Are you Paris X Martineau? No. Are you Twit X? No, I think we're all right.
Pretty good.
But for instance, if you're Carfax, you might want to register CARFA Twitter.com so that somebody doesn't accidentally click Carfax and get to a bad site. Okay, now, so he posted this April 10th, Brian Krebs did. He says, update, it appears Twitter has realized the problem and corrected it. So they don't do it anymore. But that's, boy, that just shows you how powerful a platform can be with just a little simple change. And people are so good about gaming the internet. Other Elon stories, he has announced that they will unveil their robo-taxi August 8th. This completely coincidentally coinciding to the sudden plummeting drop in Tesla's market price on the, on the stock market. I think the price, by the way, the shares did go up as when he announced the robo-taxi. He has been literally promising this since 2016. Actually, 2015.
I've got a question for you guys.
Yes.
If you saw an email that included the word delve, what would you think?
Are you going to start this delve thing now? Okay.
What do you guys think about this? What's Oh, Mr. I'm not on Twitter. You know the delve
thing. I only peripherally know about the delve thing.
Jeff, do you use the word delve? Do you think it's suspicious to use the word delve?
No, of course not.
Not for me, because I'm a language snob.
I love the word delve.
I'm always talking about how I delve into stuff.
What do the seven dwarves do when they dig in a mine? They delve.
They delve deep.
Well, so why did
Graham
what happened?
Disagrees. Paul Graham, a couple days ago, tweeted, someone sent me a cold email proposing a novel project. Then I noticed it used the word delve. And everybody in the replies is like, oh, delve is a classic sign that someone's using ChatGPT.
Ah.
No real person uses the word delve. And I am just baffled by this. I never thought that normal words could be co-opted into some sign of roboticism.
Paul Graham does bring
I use the phrase pedantry would require.
Yeah.
That sounds like ChatGPT wrote that, actually. I didn't want to say anything.
Hey.
But Paul Graham did put the graph up that shows that the papers with delve in the title or abstract suddenly went rose precipitously in 2022, coinciding with the advent of ChatGPT. I mean, it's still only 0.793% of papers. I don't know if that's statistically valid.
I don't know.
It's a pretty
small.
But
that's the whole point, though. Like, if a lot of people use the word, then ChatGPT will use the word, right?
Right. Oh, that's a good point. Where did it learn that word? There is, by the way, a company called Delve. I guess he didn't fund it. That's why I know this, by the way, because I am a Paul Graham stan.
Oh, you're a Graham head?
Well, I don't agree with everything he says, but a lot of his writing is great. Lately, he's been a little weird. But everybody's been red-pilled.
So you're anti-delve?
No, but I understand what he's looking for. If you search for the phrase, as an artificial intelligence? As a large language model. If you search for that in Amazon reviews, you will suddenly realize, or academic papers, the people are being very lazy about including ChatGPT outputs.
But I do think it's kind of interesting the way that our reaction to the adoption of ChatGPT is causing paranoia around completely normal words.
Yeah,
like, I mean, even looking into the replies of this, you're learning a lot about me in this episode, which is that I spend a lot of time reading replies to stuff. You have like some of these tweets that have like 1,000+ likes say other supposedly suspicious ChatGPT words like safeguard, robust, demystify, in this digital world. See also foster, embark, empower, harness, unlock, unleash, and crucial. All of these are words I use regularly.
Yeah.
Some of them.
Am I a robot?
It's just a signal, right? It wouldn't be conclusive, but it's a signal. And it's something to pay attention to. He shouldn't.
If you use paradigm, you get built.
But this is a really good example of why Twitter is a pain in the ass. Because he said it as if it's a hard and fast rule. I'm sure it isn't.
Well, that's very him.
Yeah, but it's also how people write on Twitter because it stimulates, you know, all this agita, which isn't people interpret as engagement. But I think this is the problem with Twitter. All that engagement is just hot air. It's very annoying. You've wasted a lot of time, Paris, on this subject.
cromulent. We should just all be using
cromulent's a very good word that I don't believe ChatGPT has discovered yet. I think you're safe. We use big words on this show frequently.
Yeah.
Like delve.
Yeah, we do.
And Gutenberg.
Yeah.
It's a huge word.
Pedantry.
Honestly, pedantry. Honestly, if somebody put Gutenberg in their proposal to my venture capital fund, I would refuse them out of hand as well.
Hey. Hey.
Mm-hmm. I just think Twitter has always, to some degree, and especially now, played upon our worst impulses as humans. That this isn't the place we should be spending time.
It depends on who you're talking to. It's not like there's one Twitter. I have people on Twitter I quite like still. There's lots of
Do you
of
ever
them.
Go to the For You tab, or are you always in the...
I'm often on the For You tab, unfortunately, even though I hate it.
Yeah.
I'm just addicted. I don't know. I tweeted the other day, Path of Totality would be a beautiful name for a baby girl, and I'm really proud of that one. How was your guys' eclipse experience? I'm sorry, we need to talk about news.
Eclipse experience. I had a wonderful eclipse experience watching CNN.
Yeah. You didn't even go outside for the eclipse.
Well, I did, but we weren't getting much of it. You got much more of it.
You got like 10%.
We got, but I poked a little hole in a shoebox, and I put it on my head, and I watched this little tiny little light with a crescent out of it for about a second, and they said, nice eclipse, and I went back in. There, you couldn't see anything. It was too bright because it was such a small sliver of it. So you had to use some other
I was at the office, which is in Flatiron, and we all, our entire building went up on the roof, which none of us knew we had access to. I guess we technically don't.
Are you in the Flatiron building?
Not in the Flatiron building, but kind of like a
Flatiron district. Okay.
Yeah. And it was gorgeous up there, and everybody
Beautiful.
Hung out.
Did you get totality where you were in the city?
No.
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 I wish I had gone to the totality. People said it was phenomenal.
I was looking down. I was at a meeting at the Canadian Consulate about the future of journalism.
Oh.
Of course you were.
And so we all looked down on the street, and it was fun to see the people down on the street all looking up.
Yeah.
It reminded me of that great Life magazine picture of the 3D. Before we got on the air, I told Paris my favorite eclipse tweet. Do you want to say it, Paris? BuzzFeed?
Oh, that was an earthquake tweet.
I'm sorry, earthquake tweet. Oh, sorry.
You know, there was an earthquake in New York. And Jeff's favorite earthquake tweet was former BuzzFeed news reporter Julia Reinstein, as well as one other colleague, had said, if BuzzFeed News was still around today, I would have been on the phone interviewing the man who had his vasectomy interrupted by the New York City earthquake right now. And I do think that that is an important look into what we're missing.
So I'm 12 miles away from the epicenter. We really felt it.
Did you feel it?
Oh, very much felt it. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
I've realized the earthquakes in New York City have made me realize that I think I'm an idiot or I'm just like unobservant because I didn't notice either of them at all. I was walking around the grocery store with the first one while listening to a podcast, so I didn't notice it whatsoever. During the aftershock, I was at home also listening to a podcast.
So after it happened in the grocery store, did people like look at you strange because you're not noticing, or were they running out?
Well, no, then I walked into the line and everybody was kind of chatting around it. And so I was like, and I opened my phone and had like 25 texts about the earthquake. So I was like, did you guys feel an earthquake? And some guy in a butcher's like costume or apron came out and he was like, yeah, I ran up from the back because all the meat was shaking.
Wow.
That's a show title. What's the biggest earthquake you've been through, Leo?
You've been in California in earthquakes, haven't you, Jeff?
Yeah, the biggest one, I forget how big it was, but biggest
Were you
one
here in 89?
I was on, I left in 81.
Oh, okay.
I was on a Muni bus when it was on, so you never got to notice the earthquake.
You wouldn't notice on a bus, yeah.
Every pothole has a Richter scale to it.
Yeah, we're kind of blasé about earthquakes. We haven't had a bad one since 89, so we're really probably due. And I hate to say it, but so is Manhattan.
Not Brooklyn, though. We're good.
Oh, really? You're not
the river
on the
will stop it. Yeah,
yeah, the
I
river
think we're
will
done.
Stop it. Sure. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. That's how it works, right?
By the way, I wanted if you have access to your Twitter, I think Lisa must have put up a picture of a eclipse party that she was invited to.
Oh, really? Lisa DeLaporte, my wife. You mean Lisa?
Yes. It abused me. Her pinned tweet right now.
This is it? The earthquake party?
I think so. It looks like, don't those all look like Twit fans?
What is? We're going to stream photo. Live from the LaPorte house.
Somewhere.
Oh yeah, probably Shutterstock. That's where.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's not my image of Twit fans.
Yeah.
Jeez. All women.
Yeah, for one thing.
No, there's two guys. There's three guys. It's equal. It's three and three.
Well, still laughable. Yeah.
Actually, it looks like AI because that popcorn is definitely.
Look at that popcorn bucket.
Yeah, I think it's AI probably.
You think so?
Yeah.
Definitely. Zoom in on that popcorn
bucket. She's been using AI lately.
Oh.
Yeah.
Look at the guy with
the pink shirt's
face. Zoom in on it.
Oh, he's Jesus.
Look at all the stuff they're holding.
Oh, his teeth are frightening. Oh, now that's a Twit fan.
That's terrible. Oh, don't be mean. Also, whose arm is that?
I'm a Twit fan, so.
There's just a random arm sticking up there. I don't think it's his. It's definitely not hers. So
what's the girl in the blue dress holding?
Nothing. It ends. Look at the left hand. It ends.
Yeah. Oh, in fact, all the beer bottles are distorted. Oh, my God. This is the truth, though, about AI stuff. It doesn't hold up to scrutiny very well, right?
No, it doesn't.
It's on the surface. It looks good. It looks real. But then you don't really pay attention.
These are Lisa's friends.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't use Twitter. But some people I know do, including you two. Let's see. Oh, I was going to say the robo-taxi, but the moment has passed. San Francisco Giants. So remember, Amazon, did we talk about this last week, is abandoned Just Walk Out. It turns out that it was 1,000 people in the Philippines or somewhere who were looking at every single purchase to make sure it was correct.
India.
Sorry, Benito. I didn't mean to besmirch your
The Philippines
people.
Answers your phone calls.
The Philippines are the phone calls, and the Indians are the examining the photos. Okay. Well, the Giants, the San Francisco baseball Giants, have decided Just Walk In is their new thing. The San Francisco Chronicle's headline, the Giants have a new unnerving way to skip the security line at Oracle Park. You use the Giants app. You give it your selfie. And then you can just walk right in. It's called the Go Ahead Entry Program. And as you walk up to the gates, you'll see it'll see that big eye, that HAL 2000 eye will take your picture and then put a big green thing that says, go ahead, you've got three tickets, enjoy the game. Just walk right in. They don't say what they're going to do with the face recognition information that they have. This is something, a pilot program, Major League Baseball's trying. Four other stadiums are also going to use that. So Amazon abandons Just Walk In, but the Giants and other baseball teams, Just Walk In. Just Walk In.
So would you register your face with that?
Yeah, you know, when you come
I would
in,
not.
I feel like, you know, they take your picture now when you come into the country, right?
Right.
They've done that for a long time. I don't know. This is a silly point to quibble over because I do global entry. So they definitely have my face scanned and everything. When I go in to do my passport thing, they don't even ask me for my passport. They just take a photo of my face and pull up my information.
That's great, isn't it?
Still, I mean, it's great. It is great. I do enjoy that part. But still, whenever I go to like a domestic flight and Delta wants to use facial recognition to let me go through, I opt out every time.
Do you? Delta, do they give you a hard time? What do they do?
The first time I did it, yes. They gave me, it was on a flight to France like 5 years ago, and they wouldn't let me opt out. I almost got like removed from the airport, and then I eventually complied and did it so that I could go to France. but since then, I haven't had any issues opting out.
Yeah, they've been clearly informed that they cannot do that. You can do the same at customs. You can say, no, I don't want you to take your picture, but I don't want to find out what the Border Patrol does if you don't let them take your picture. They also say that they destroy it as soon as they've made the match with your passport, that they don't keep the pictures. I don't believe it though. When people say we don't keep the pictures, you know, I mean, I guess the government doesn't lie, but
I guess the government's never told a lie. They've never been duplicitous. They've never done anything untoward with our data.
No, of course not.
They protect the rights of all Americans.
Right, that's their job. Mm-hmm. Take a little break here while we ponder that deep philosophical question. Does the government lie? When we talk about our sponsor, Melissa. Melissa is the data quality experts. They have been since 1985. Melissa offers free trials, sample codes, flexible pricing, because they know that money matters to you. They also have an ROI guarantee. And Melissa offers unlimited technical support to all their customers all over the world. And I mean all over the world. They have international address validation that cleans and corrects street addresses all over the world globally. They even can automatically transliterate addresses from one language system to another, from Chinese to Cyrillic or, Chinese to Persian and that kind of thing. Download the free Melissa Lookups app on Google Play or the App Store. No sign up is required. You can try it for free. Use it to validate an address or a personal identity in the U.S. or Canada. This is really a useful little app everybody should have on their device. You could check global phone numbers to find out the caller, the carrier, geographic information. Who is that keeps calling me? Check global IP address information and more. And when you use Melissa for your business to make sure your contact lists are up to date, you can be reassured that they use the highest level of security to protect your data. In fact, they are now FedRAMP authorized. That's for good news for government agencies, good news for everybody. It means that they adhere to a higher standard of data protection. All Melissa users gain that level of security. They also are GDPR and CCPA compliant. They meet SOC 2 and HIPAA high trust standards for information security management. Your data is safe with Melissa. Get started today with 1,000 records cleaned for free at melissa.com/twit. MELISSA, melissa.com/twit. We thank them so much for their support of This Week in Google.
I've got a story I want to talk about.
Yes, ma'am.
In the chat. If you are around Washington Square Park and you walk into a small Japanese fried chicken shop called San San Chicken, you might see, a kiosk touchscreen, and there's a cashier there to take your order. But it's not like a normal cashier, which would be there in the human flesh and meat space. It's a cashier on Zoom, a woman from the Philippines who has been hired to be the virtual cashier of this small chicken shop.
This story from 404 Media, Jules Roscoe. Wow. Is there nobody there?
I think that there's someone back there making the chicken, I assume. But I love this photo of the woman on the Zoom screen who looks incredibly bored.
Hey, but she has a Zoom chicken background there. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of cool. I mean, it's a little basic. But have you been to this shop?
I haven't. This is a new... this wasn't here when I went to college at NYU. But I thought it was quite interesting that a NYU student told 404 Media that one time when she was there was both an in-person and a Zoom cashier.
Well, they were training.
I think is also very interesting.
Yeah.
Probably.
Wait a minute. Look at this. They even in the picture here on X from Brett Goldstein have the meeting ID and the passcode for the Zoom call.
In case you get disconnected.
If you get disconnected, you can get back in so you can get your soda pop. Well, good for her. I hope they're paying her well.
I doubt it.
It would be. I mean, it could easily be an AI, though, right? I mean, that's the next step.
Oh, she said that the cashiers work through... this is a manager at the chicken shop from 404 Media. The manager said that the cashiers work through a different company based in the Philippines, which has a 12-hour time difference to New York and usually changes shifts around 3 p.m. The cashier confirmed that she was in the Philippines, where she said that it was 1 a.m.
Oh, wow. But, you know, maybe she wants to work late at night, you know?
Well, actually, that's a very big industry in the Philippines of, you know, call centers and stuff like that. So, like, half of the working age population lives on American time zone.
Oh, that's interesting.
Interesting.
When you go back there, is it, like, bustling at 2 in the morning as they get off
shift?
Very
much so, yeah.
How interesting.
Wow.
Now, I presume that the pay is lower in the Philippines. Let me ask you, Benito, is it, I mean, obviously it's a lot lower, but is it sufficient if you're living in the Philippines, or are they getting taken advantage of, do you think?
Well, it really depends, because like, it sounds like these people are working for a company, a local company, and not being paid by the American company. The American company outsources this contract to a company in the Philippines who then hires them.
Right.
So I'm guessing they're not getting paid very much.
And they take the job because there's nothing else they can do?
Mostly, yeah. And you know, we speak very good English in the Philippines.
Right. Yeah, I mean, if you go on a cruise, it's the dirty little secret of almost all cruise lines that it's staffed by Filipinos and Asians of other stripes, where they can pay them a lot less, but they're willing to do the job. And the job is tough. They work 12-hour days, sometimes without a day off, 7 days a week. And they often have to sign long contracts, 3, 4, 6 months of 7-day work weeks.
Recommend a piece to you that's just Gary Steingart, who I've met, who's just really wonderful.
I read it. It was hysterical.
Oh, have you read this, Paris, in the Atlantic? Crying Myself to Sleep on the Biggest Cruise Ship Ever by Gary Steingart.
Oh, I saw
it.
It
is brilliant.
Do you know Gary? Because I really enjoyed reading it. He was, I guess, forced to go on the inaugural voyage of the largest and most appallingly disgusting cruise ship in the world, the Icon of the Seas. I actually took Lisa and her son on its predecessor, the Anthem of the Seas. And to my deep regret, I understand why he cried himself to sleep. 7 agonizing nights aboard the Icon of the Seas.
It looks like a hodgepodge of domes and minarets, tubes and canopies, like Istanbul had been designed by idiots.
It's
vibrant,
big.
Oversignifying colors are stacked upon other such colors. Decks perched over still more decks. The only comfort is a row of lifeboats ringing its perimeter. There is no imposed order, no cogent thought. And for those who do not harbor a totalitarian sense of gigantomania, no visual mercy. This is the biggest cruise ship ever built, and I have been tasked with witnessing its inaugural voyage. By the time he did it, it was out of decent rooms at a decent price, so he had to get a suite at $19,000. But the suite had no windows.
It didn't face in. It didn't face in. It faced out. I mean, it didn't face out. It faced in. It faced the Central Park. Because in the middle of this behemoth is a park, and rooms face into this. So here you are in the ocean, at least. The beauty of a cruise, from my point of view, is you are on the ocean. But in this case, your view is not of the ocean, but of people shopping.
I guess, yeah, if you're on the biggest cruise ship in the world, a lot of the rooms are going to be on the inside of the cruise ship.
It is wild. This is their...
So one of the characters, he talks about the Philippines, one of the people who has to work there is a character who, at deck 15 by the
Man
buffet, Mr. Washy Washy, or according to his name tag, Neilbert of the Philippines. He is dressed as a taco. On other occasions, I've seen him dressed as a burger. Mr. Washy Washy performs an eponymous song in spirited, indeed flamboyant English. Washy Washy, wash your hands, Washy Washy.
A lot of these ships, because norovirus is a real problem on them, force you to wash before you eat. And
sinks outside the dining
room. But he's probably got one of the better jobs on the ship. At least all he has to do is stand around and dance and sing.
Think about what that costume smells like, though.
Washy's got to have a clean costume. People love it. I'm not going to knock it if you love it, but it was a very funny piece. And by the way, in the spirit of an earlier piece, a very famous piece by
David Foster Wallace.
David Foster Wallace, your favorite.
A supposedly fun thing I'll never do again.
You know it.
But it's really in the spirit of Mark Twain in his first book.
Oh, really? What was his first book?
He went,
Something Abroad, right?
Save Me, chat room, Save Me. You're surely is
The Innocence Abroad.
Innocence Abroad, thank you. Yeah, yeah.
I use this website called Google. I don't know if you guys have heard of it.
It's actually
what did you search for. I was not.
It's a good
Mark
book.
Mark Twain,
yeah, right.
First book.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, very good. Yeah.
It's a very good book.
It's easy to put down that kind of thing. If people enjoy it, all more power to them.
Absolutely. Well, the funny thing about the story too is the people who make a life of it, and like I'm a frequent flyer on United, they're frequent cruisers, and they get certain privileges.
Oh yeah, we get good stuff.
They're frequent cruisers.
Yeah,
yeah.
Here's from Condé Nast. There was an article about a guy who lives on a cruise ship.
Fresh injection of ketamine.
Yeah, really.
Frequent cruise.
I would live on a cruise ship, honestly, if they if I had the money.
God, no.
Oh, it's nice. It's pleasant. It's a good life. They make your bed for you. They feed
haven't
you.
There had a wasn't there a lot of issues with the cruise ship that a bunch of people bought
they
rooms
did.
On that was supposed
yes.
to sail forever?
Yes. Yes.
And it hasn't sailed.
It was supposed
yet.
To sail for a full year or something.
It has yet
and
to
then
sail.
The ship wasn't up to snuff.
Right. Right. I almost hesitate to even mention this, but the House and the Senate are actually, according to the Washington Post, nearing a deal on a landmark online privacy bill. How is that possible?
I know.
And will it pass?
A good online privacy bill or a bad privacy bill?
That story doesn't say much about it, but there's some more details down at line 89.
The thing I noticed, even in that article from the Washington Post, is it supersedes all state bills.
State. That's the key.
And we have quite a few, I think, pretty good state privacy bills, including the CCPA here in California. And if you ask me, the whole idea about this federal law is to get rid of the things that companies don't like about the state laws. Of course, companies don't like a hodgepodge of regulations, right?
No, nobody does, because then it just messes up.
Right.
How you do that. I mean, Europe did the same thing with the Digital Services Act and so on. They wanted a uniformity across the continent.
Yeah. Makes it easier to operate.
You think we could do that in one country, but we can't.
Yeah. Maria Cantwell and McMorris Rogers proposing it left and right on the aisle. It would cover minors.
Data minimization.
But not the age restrictions, which I think are a real problem with the COSA bills.
Oh, it's awful. Yeah. Awful. Civil rights protections, opt out for AI. I'm not sure that just sounds like that's just of the minute. We got to throw AI into this. Yeah, what do we do? Let them opt out. Okay.
Also, the FTC's proposed rulemaking on commercial surveillance and data security would be terminated by this bill. So I think this is one where you really want to look very carefully.
Yeah, because it's private right of action, which means people can sue, but they're going to.
That's what
the
bugs
right
me.
Limit that.
The enforcement.
They can sue for what?
Privacy violations.
The enforcement is private citizens suing.
There's
very
no 2-year
American.
Delay before lawsuits can be filed, as there was. Plaintiffs do not have to first give the FTC, their state AG, an opportunity to be the ones to bring the case. The right to cure can last for 30 days, not 45. So, yeah, this is actually worse.
Here's a story, I think, from you, Paris. Instagram made more money than YouTube in early 2022. This came out of a discovery in the FTC's antitrust lawsuit. And, in fact, generated 30% of Meta's revenue in early 2022. I'm not surprised. I spend so much money on Instagram ads.
Yeah, I'm not surprised either. I mean, I don't spend any money on Instagram ads ever. I mean, I don't spend any money on ads typically.
You don't buy seaweed sweaters and bamboo underwear? And what?
No,
shoes.
If I see an ad, I will make a conscious note of
it.
I will not click on it, and then I will wait on a later date, a different device, in a private browsing window, and look
at
it myself.
That,
I don't
Instagram.
Want. I don't.
Oh, come
I don't know.
On.
For some reason,
give them a
I
break.
Don't like the idea of the advertiser knowing that it worked.
Oh,
on me.
That's
I know
mean.
That this is illogical, but
yes.
It's how I feel.
If you're gonna buy it from Insta, through Insta, at least give them the credit.
I don't know. I don't know.
If you walk through my house, it is full of stuff we bought.
What have you bought recently from Instagram?
What have you bought?
Lisa,
you can, you know what, Leo, could be a good exercise. You can open up your phone and see your most recently clicked ads.
Can you?
Really?
Yes, you can.
Where?
Let me find
it. Is it in Instagram or is it a...
It is in Instagram.
Oh, I can't wait. I could tell you all the stuff I've bought recently.
And then you could just search ad activity, I believe is what it is.
Oh, this is
great
news.
Yeah, recent ad activity.
I'm so excited. Recent ad activity. It's in the settings. Is it?
And it will show you recently. So if you just, if you go to settings, there's a search bar at the top and search ad activity. I mean, by the time I typed ad A, it popped up.
Okay. I'm just, this is exciting for me because I know it's probably going to be worse than I even. Recent ad activity.
And then go, it says recently clicked story ads.
This is what we love about Leo. He's willing to humiliate himself. For the show.
Explora Journey Cruises. Okay. Ritz-Carlton.
Oh,
yacht
there's
collection.
Only one Instagram story ad that you've clicked on up there. That's very funny.
Twillery. What is Twillery?
What is that?
Oh, it's shirts. I didn't buy, none of these have I purchased yet. So here's, this is private flights to LA. No one gets
so these are just
by,
all of this ad.
Here's a
ads
shirt.
You've seen.
I clicked these, or are these
a
ads I've
shirts.
Seen? No.
These are ads you've seen.
Yeah, not that I clicked. Perfect travel shoes. Here's some more shirts. Here's a disgusting frozen coffee pod. I know I didn't click on that. Well, actually, I might have. Oh, I did buy this. This is the sprouting company, Seed Sprouters. So I did buy that.
What does protein mix mean from
a
seed
sprout? Oh, it's just, they're little green things. So you have this seed sprouter, see? Oh, you should get this. This would be just right for your Brooklyn apartment. So you have the seed sprouter, and in 4 or 5 days, you're going to get little microgreens of, and then you get subscription bags of microgreens.
Oh, you are such a schmuck.
Why couldn't I just buy microgreens?
Oh, because they don't stay fresh. You don't want to buy microgreens in the store. They're too old. You want freshly grown microgreens. I'm doing the salad mix. Last week it was the broccoli mix. I haven't tried the protein mix. So that's that was a good Instagram purchase. What's,
did you subscribe to it? How much?
Oh,
is it
hell
month?
Yeah. I don't know. Who cares? It's just money. I can't take it with me. Oh, this is my new toothbrush. This is the electric toothbrush you can repair.
This is like the $150 toothbrush you got, right?
Well, no, but all electric toothbrushes are expensive. This one's the one you should get next time because...
It's connected, right?
No, it's not connected.
It's got Bluetooth, right?
No. That's the thing I like about it.
Well, that's what you paid more for now is not to be connected.
It's $116. It's repairable. It's an aluminum body that can be repaired. So it's got a screw and you can send it back to them. And the heads are recyclable. They're made out of cornstarch so that you, when you buy new heads, they send you, they
you
give you a
eat
bag.
Them when you're done.
Yeah, you send it back to them and then they eat them. So that was good. Here's my seaweed. Here's my seaweed sweater. This is what got me is harvesting the
Did
seaweed.
Did you really get a seaweed sweater?
Yeah, it's a nice sweater. I like it. It's using a.
Does it smell like seaweed?
No. It's a fiber made out of the
smells
cells.
Like Leo.
It smells like me now. Yeah. No, it's very good. It makes it's sea cell. It's a well known. I love these shoes, the Birchberry shoes with room for your toes. I got two pairs of those.
What?
With room for your toes.
It's... Are you having issues with your toes not fitting in shoes?
Well, no.
There are no tie shoelaces, Leo. There are no tie. Are you a toddler?
Yeah, these
it's
are great. I love these.
To tie your shoes.
I was at the dentist the other day. He said, nice shoes. Maybe he was mocking me. I don't know. The binge watch for more intimacy. OMG,
well, this
yes.
This is weird.
I didn't do that one. Oh, I did do this one to my great regret. This is pork from Spain. Do not order pork from Spain.
The Wagyu of pork.
Yeah, it's the same. It's the same as pork you'd get locally. It tastes exactly. I thought, I love Spanish jamón ibérico. It's expensive because they ship it from Spain. It's fine. It's okay. I'm actually, right now in my sous vide, I've got some spare ribs that have been, here's a little tip. If you get ribs and you say, I want some ribs tonight for dinner. No, you can't do that. They go in the sous vide 36 hours before you can eat them. So I have some ribs that have been in the sous vide since day before yesterday that we're going to have those tonight. Those are going to be good. And those are from Spain. We'll see if they're good. I don't know.
Are they from this company?
Yeah, Campo Grande.
Oh.
Yep. That, see?
All right.
He's in Spain. He's eating pork. I did get this. You saw this. This is the thermometer that measures the temperature.
Yeah, we did see that.
And it
that,
works.
Yeah.
It's good. I like it. I'm
is
glad
it
I
really
bought it.
Is it really game-changing?
Yeah, sort of. Well, no, not really. But it does measure all the different temperatures. So you know, and it goes beep when it's the right temperature. That's nice. So I bought a few of these, yeah. I don't know what this is. The binge watch for more intimacy. I don't. So these aren't things I know.
Popular package for couples.
Oh, they could be. I think because these are video ads, it's stuff that you watched for like more than a second or two.
Oh, is it like
that?
Because
mine are all things like that too. They're just like. You
paused on it, but you didn't necessarily click it.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, thank you, Meta, for at least telling me. But that is a fraction of what. Lisa got me knives from Instagram for Christmas. I'm wearing underwear from Instagram made out of bamboo.
So how much of that 30% revenue was all you, Leah?
Probably considerable amount. Of all the ad platforms, I shouldn't say this, ours works the best. Next best, Instagram ads are very effective. Except for this one here, who goes to the site independently of Instagram because she doesn't want them to get any credit.
I will say, I've been called out by looking at my own. There are a couple of Instagram story ads things. I've clicked. Yeah. I don't know if I've bought anything. I always open it on a separate tab and whatnot. But
Look at it this way. If it's pay per click, then you're costing.
Oh, that's true. Yeah. The advertiser, you're saving them money by not doing that. But they will never know that you came to them through Instagram.
Yeah, that's what they
paid probably
for.
Do
that's
know.
What they paid for, though, is to know.
Know. Because everybody wants to know, what do my ads work? Nobody wants to buy ads that they don't know that they worked. And that's the sad truth. And that's why podcasting is suffering, because we can't tell you.
Yeah, you can't.
We don't know. Data. We don't know.
And the truth is, neither can any other medium really tell you.
Yeah, it's all.
They act like they can more than podcasts. It's all.
Yes, and it's just a cycle again and again of a new medium being like, we could tell you. We could tell you more information. Right. You should spend your money here. And then a couple of years later, they're like, oh, wait, no, this influencers or this new website, they can really tell you.
I know you put this link in, Jeff, because it's named Muskie. Elon Musk's self-inflicted wounds and other highlights from a newly released deposition. This is from Quartz. He's being sued.
Various versions of the story.
Oh,
he's being sued by a California man targeted by a conspiracy theory that Elon boosted on Twitter. He amplified claims that a 22-year-old Jewish man from California was an undercover agent in a neo-Nazi group. He was not, in fact. But Elon, of course, didn't fact check it and tweeted, looks like one is a college student, another is maybe an Antifa member, but none is nonetheless a probable false flag situation. Because Elon, like all billionaires, is brilliant and knows more than the rest of us. Throughout the deposition, Musk acknowledged the impact his ex-habits have on his company, testifying he is, quote, guilty of many self-inflicted wounds. I hope Elon's not getting depressed. Maybe the ketamine has worn off. If I were him, I might be a little depressed. He spent 44.
I may have done more to financially impair the company than to help it.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
He told advertisers to go F themselves during an interview with the New York Times. He says, but certainly I do not guide my posts by what is financially beneficial, but by what I believe is interesting or important or entertaining to the public. I care only about my public, my fans, even to my own detriment. He role played as his toddler. He confessed that he used a burner account that was supposedly X's, his 2-year-old son. In one of the posts, he says, I will finally turn 3 on May 4th, which is, of course, X's actual birthday. Well, so what? I've done that. That's not.
No, there are other tweets from that account, though, that are not.
Oh, they're not so nice?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because I had a dog account. I had account for Ozzy, my dog, and I would tweet Ozzy's thoughts.
No, he tweeted that stuff about his mom and stuff like that.
Oh, my God. He used X's fake account to go after Grimes.
To go after Lori. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not Lords. I don't think he's...
Yeah, you're right.
Grimes. That's not so great. That's not so great.
Did you see the deposition transcript between Musk and the lawyer representing the man who's suing him?
No, tell us.
I posted a little screenshot of it in the chat. I'll give a dramatic reading. This is between Elon Musk and the opposing guy's lawyer. And so the lawyer says, Mr. Musk, to Musk, you're aware that Ben Brody is someone who's sued you, right? Oh. And Elon goes, I think you're the one suing. And he goes, actually, Mr. Musk, I'm an attorney. Do you know that? I'm an attorney representing Mr. Brody. And Musk goes, yes, but many times I found that the actual plaintiff is the attorney. And he goes, okay, but that's just an assumption you're making, right? Like, you don't know anything about Ben Brody? Musk goes, I don't. And the lawyer goes, okay, you understand that Ben Brody has filed a lawsuit against you. And Musk goes, in my opinion, you're the one filing the lawsuit. And the lawyer goes, okay, you understand. Let's try to make this easier. And they go back and forth and back and forth.
This is, again, and I don't know what happens to these people. It's like the idea that I'm a sovereign citizen and I don't have to pay taxes.
Yeah,
they get in their head. And then they become adamant about it. No. Brody's not suing me. It's lawyers.
You're suing.
It's also projection.
It's his buddy Peter Thiel and Gawker magazine. Gawker, that's right? True. I mean, it's
yeah.
It's,
it wasn't Hulk Hogan that sued Gawker. It was Peter Thiel who financed it.
Yeah. Right underneath it. Yeah.
Lawyers do not. It's not in accordance with the lawyer's creed, says the attorney, to just start making random statements about the alleged frivolity of a case to another lawyer in a deposition. You know that's not proper. You know that.
And this is Elon's lawyer, Alex Spiro.
Do you give these lectures at all your depositions? I do. And you can watch them. Wow.
This whole transcript is really gold. It's full of a bunch of bangers.
Elon tried to keep it out of public vision.
Of course. It's embarrassing.
Yeah.
And I actually feel a little bad for Elon.
You do this again.
Tell me more.
Stop.
Well, he's a human like you and me. We don't know if we were put in his position, worth billions of dollars.
Oh,
I suppose if we were born into a family that was incredibly wealthy due to emerald mines and other such exploits, we might be warped in ways that we couldn't currently process. Sure. Yeah,
and I don't think Elon was always warped, but I think... You know, it's tough to be in the public eye and have nobody tell you anything wrong. It just, even if you aren't a narcissist to begin with, it turns you into a malignant narcissist. It causes mental health issues. And I just feel bad for him. He would have done much better had he been a normal human that wasn't wealthy.
He's promoting Nazi crap. I agree.
Yeah, what he's doing is terrible, but he's demented. Can we just say he's demented?
Well, but that becomes an excuse. No, he's making choices.
Demented choices. But he's demented. I feel bad for somebody who's got these demented beliefs and nobody's telling them otherwise. And he's been
he can read the stories about himself when people say they're demented and he doesn't do anything. So he can find plenty of people who will tell him he's
Jeff,
demented.
Jeff, if you were demented, I would also make apologies and excuses for you too.
It's true.
Is he trying to say that I'm demented? Is this
your
subtle way
demented.
To say that?
This is all a dream, Jeff. You've been asleep for 40 years. We're trying to reach you. We're trying to get through. Wake up.
Podcast called Brigadoon.
More Whip Van Winkle.
In a very Leo-like aside, I had a dinner a couple weeks ago with an unnamed AI executive. And I was not radicalized by it. The only interesting detail that I'll reveal on this was that he had been invited this last summer to a dinner that when he showed up, Elon Musk and Grimes, as well as one of their kids, for some reason, I want to think the kid's name is Megatron, but I might be making that up. It's something like that. One of their kids with the silly name was there. And, you know, they had some normal conversation, whatever. And then as they were leaving, the guy was like, oh, bye. And they were getting into a car. So he was like, drive safe. And Elon turns back to him and he's like, I don't need to. And then shuts the car door. And I think that's pretty funny.
That's funny. That's funny. I think, you know what I think happened, Paris?
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the same person who walked on the beach with Leo. And as a part of the conspiracy,
he'll be asking you to lunch soon, Jeff. You're next.
That's true. Yeah.
You're next.
You know? I'll be getting next. Yep.
And if Jeff suddenly starts saying all the wonderful things AI is going to do, we'll know. We'll know. If he writes a long piece in Medium,
we'll know. This has been a long con to influence the most influential podcast around, This yes. Week in Google.
Yes.
Little break while I beg you to give us money. Not for me. I'm not asking for myself. I won't see any of this. I'm not asking for Lisa. I'm asking for people like Benito, who only make $2.25 an hour. I would like to see Benito go on, go to college.
He could be at Taco Bell, but he sacrifices at $20 an hour. No. He sacrifices to be here at $2.25
an hour. I don't know what we pay you, Benito, but I think we give you a living salary, right?
Sure.
Okay, God. Leo, we're going to a... We can't be doing this.
The point
we gotta
is,
roll the tape back.
The point is, we employ a large number of people. This is kind of crazy because a podcast really shouldn't be done in a studio with lights and cameras and staff and editors and studio technicians and this was crazy to do it this way. And I admit it; it's totally my fault. I came from old media. I kind of recreated what I knew, and for many years it worked. It was okay, but the time
actually created it. At a much smaller scale than what you came from. At the time, it was an amazing decrease.
Well, it felt like, I mean, we Tech TVs had two control rooms each that cost multi-million dollars to build. I thought if I could do this for $10,000 or $50,000, I'm way ahead of the game. What I didn't understand was it really was a bad idea because it was just podcasting. But nevertheless, I think we've built something pretty good. And we have mostly what we have is a wonderful team. People behind the camera, but also people in front of the camera, like Paris and Jeff, all of our contributors. And I want to keep doing this. But the truth is, it's getting harder and harder because advertising is dwindling. You might say, well, Leo, you had 3 ads on the show. Yeah, but those ads are paying half what they paid even 12 months ago. And it's going down from that. We aren't in a position, frankly, at the current rate of revenue to continue for more than about 8 more months. It all really comes down to whether our audience wants us to do it. And that means you. If you like what you hear, if you listen to this show, if you listen to more than one show, and if you can afford $7, if you can't, I understand. But if you can, we would really appreciate it if you join Club Twit. $7 a month. We try to give you some reason to join ad-free versions of all the shows because we don't need to show you ads or track you or anything like that if you're giving us $7 a month. We also give you video from all the shows that you only hear audio of, like Hands on Windows, Hands on Mac, The Untitled Linux Show, Home Theater Geeks. We do a lot of good shows. We give you the Discord, which is a great place to hang out, not just during shows, but all week long. All of that for $7 a month. And I should add the good feeling that knows that you're supporting a kind of journalism that I think we need. Journalism that helps you understand tech, that helps kind of explain tech, keeps you company, of course, and entertains you, but also comes to you with, a deep understanding of what's going on in the world and how what it's going to mean for you. If you're not a member of Club Twit, may I ask you, please, twit.tv/Club Twit. And if you want to give more, you can. We did, I have to tell you, discontinue the annual plan, which was the same price. It was just you pay once every 12 months. And there's a very simple reason for that. I don't know if we'll be here in 12 months. So I didn't feel right. Every time somebody bought a 12-month subscription, I was feeling like, oh, now we got to go another year. And I don't know if we can. I honestly don't know if we can.
Jesus,
so,
that took the...
That's really grim.
Yeah, that's the truth.
That took the rug out.
I don't want people to, in 12 months, if we do go away, say, oh, you should have warned us. This is the warning. I'm just telling you, I'd like to keep going. I want to keep Benito and John and everybody employed. I want to keep doing what we're doing. And I really, really want to keep telling it as it is. I think there's a mission for us with Steve Gibson and Paul Thurrott and Richard Campbell and you guys and the MacBreak Weekly team. And Micah Sargent. I think all what we're doing here is important, and but we have to have your help to keep doing it. That's just the bottom line. Twit.tv/clubtwit. I hate saying that. I hate doing it. But I think you need to know. I don't want anybody to come to me in a year and say, hey, what happened? It's tough times. Anyway, don't feel depressed. I didn't mean to depress you.
Yeah, we are.
It would be the end of an era.
I like what we're doing. I would like to make it to 20. It'll be 20 years. You know, by the way, April 17th is the 19th anniversary of the network. And it is, I take a lot of responsibility because I did build something that was probably in hindsight more expensive than it should have been.
It made sense at the time.
And we, and, you know, to be frank, we made a lot of money over a lot of revenue over the years. Advertising was very good for many years.
It all went to Instagram.
We built a giant studio and, you know, we did a lot of good things. And fortunately, thanks to Lisa, Lisa and I have saved enough money that we could retire. So don't worry about us. We're not going to suffer, but I do worry a lot about all of our team members. You're all talented, good people. You'll find work. Benito, there's a chicken place in Washington Square in New York City that's looking for
cashiers. And you can work from home in Petaluma.
That's mean. That's mean.
Which, by the way, is the chicken capital of the country.
Oh, so. Butter and Eggs Day is coming up on Saturday. Why don't you all come out? Ironically, I'm flying to Mom's. I'm going to miss Butter and Eggs Day. I will be in Providence, Rhode Island for the next week.
Quite sad.
I know. Bad timing. I feel really bad. So I will do this show from Mom's house next week. We are doing, we had an open studio on Sunday. It was wonderful. It was so nice to see all of you. Lisa says, I thought maybe we could do more of these. She says, this is the last open studio we will ever do, probably, in all likelihood. And that will be on the 21st, a week from Sunday. I don't know if a number of people bailed at the last minute, so get on the waiting list, and we'll let you know 24 hours ahead of time. If you can come, we'd love to see you in studio on the 21st. That's club members only right now, although I think we're probably going to open it up to the public. And if you come for Butter and Eggs Day, spend the night in beautiful Petaluma and come to the open studio the next day. And I thought we might do some more later this summer. Lisa says, yeah, we're not going to do that. This studio,
stretched.
I mean, the next step, honestly, will be to shut down the studio and do the shows from home. And we'll do that before we shut completely, of course. But that's in all likelihood what's going to happen this year. So, sorry about the bad news. Can I cheer you up? Anything exciting?
A brief correction. It's not Megatron Musk, the Musk baby. It's Techno Mechanus Musk.
Jesus.
I apologize for spreading.
You know, I'll forgive Elon for everything else, but saddling little innocent children with those names, not nice. Weird.
Not great.
Weird.
Unfortunate.
Yeah. Let's see. Anything else? Oh, I forgot the change log. Here's the Google change log.
I think you already did it.
No, it feels like I did, but it wasn't official. Five workspace announcements from Google Cloud Next, which I can't open. Jeff.
Oh, it's my fault. It's my fault.
What are you doing? Are you messing with the...
Yeah, I did. I did. I screwed up. Well, just Google five workspace announcements. It's a Google thing. Hold on. Oh, shoot.
This and is you're... not even a link, Jeff.
I know it's not. I screwed up. I screwed up. Here we go. Okay. I'll put it in the Discord.
I found it. It's too late. I already found it. Get a peek at the new features coming to Docs, Sheets, Meet, and More. Okay. Docs, Sheets, Meet, and More. I wonder if that meat was shaken.
Sounds like a butcher shop.
It doesn't sound right. Create and share videos at work with Google Vids.
Is this kind of a replacement for, I think it's AI and kind of a replacement for PowerPoint, which ruined all thought. This could make it worse.
So instead of even, people have already started using ChatGPT and other things for creating PowerPoints, but this is basically the idea. You create a slideshow. And the AI suggests scenes from stock videos, images, and background music. It can help you land your message with the right voiceover. Oh, I want to see this so bad. Choose from one of our preset voiceovers or use your own. It's your video writing, production, and editing assistant all in one. It's funny because Google has taken a lot of heat for the quality of Gemini. is it
mainly because of the effort to tune out the bias in society?
But it isn't.
I mean, yeah. Why isn't Google fixing societal ills?
Well,
yeah.
That's true. But no, it doesn't. It doesn't feel like it's that good. Like it's not as good as ChatGPT-4 is. Like the. By
the way,
they put
so many guardrails on.
One of the reasons ChatGPT-4 is so good, you probably saw this, is that they wrote a program called Whisper, a program we use for transcription. They wrote this program so that they could steal the text of YouTube videos and
like
ingest it, like a billion of them, and ingest it into OpenAI's chat LLM. This is against Google's own terms of service. But
do they mean like the descriptions for YouTube videos?
The transcript of the video.
Okay, those are really poorly.
They wrote their own
watching videos.
They wrote their own tool to do it. They did. You're right. They didn't use Google's transcripts. They wrote Whisper AI, which is a very good. I use it. A very good transcription tool in ChatGPT, and so they didn't even use Google's own tool, and they just sucked up a billion videos against Google's terms of service and without the permission of the creators. I mean, I'm sure some of our videos were in there. I don't really care. But that was one of the reasons that ChatGPT-4 is so good. So, yeah, that's kind of funny. you can automatically translate captions in more languages and meet. This is all from the cloud event yesterday. More meet and chat features. You know, it's so funny. I was looking through my messaging apps earlier today on Windows Weekly, and I found Meet and Chat, and I thought, what are those? That's the replacement for Hangouts, you might remember, that no one uses. Do you use it? Jeff, does any company you work with use it?
Use Meet?
Yeah, or Chat.
Yeah, some. Chat, no. I make a living complaining about people who use Teams.
Oh, Teams is just
as
bad.
I have literally never used Teams.
Oh, I hate
once
Teams.
Not once in my life.
Teams.
Is it so much worse than Zoom, or is it you just zoomed out?
Oh, yeah, 10 times worse. It has to open the app. It delays. Then the camera doesn't go on. It's just a mess. I did this Nordic AI and media conference this morning, and it was on Teams, and I had to ungraciously start by growling about it because I had to try.
Teams is Microsoft's version of Zoom.
It's awful.
Or Meet.
It's just awful.
Well, yeah, come to think of it, we do use Meet for all of our in-house meetings because we're a Google Workspace company. Not for much longer, probably. Protect sensitive files with new AI security add-on. Add-on that lets IT teams automatically identify, classify, and protect sensitive files company-wide in Google Drive. Now available for $10 per user per month. Oh. A lot of these are not free, I should mention.
Yeah, this is you know, worth poor at. This is like Leo asking for members to join. Google's in the same boat now.
I don't think Google's in the same exact boat. I hope not. Better organize information with Sheets, with new Sheets and Docs features. Sheets is getting new table features that format and organize data in a sleek, updated design, I guess using AI, right? And you can use Gemini. I keep calling it Gemini.
Gemini.
Gemini Cricket. Gemini Cricket. You can use Gemini. Although that'd be a good name for an AI.
Gemini Cricket.
Gemini Cricket.
Yeah.
You would talk
I'm
to
sure
him.
Disney would have no issues with
that. You can create images as well. You know what? For all I know, Lisa used Gemini to create that image for her tweet. Since we have that, we have it. Easily send messages with new. Oh, we better hurry. We're only through five of them. Easily send messages with new Gmail features.
Like what kind of messages, Leo? Isn't that what you do in Gmail? Is send messages?
Yeah.
This seems to suggest that you can just kind of type moderate gobbledygook in an email, and then Gmail will polish it up into a professional draft.
Here's an example. I write Project Lumina Sync? Question mark. Tony mentioned you. Still working on Project Lumina? Would love to sync. In town for lunch next week, if available. Let me know.
LMK.
Putting on the Ritz. And then the Polish draft. Hi there.
Can you do a Polish accent, Leo, please, for the Polish draft?
It's in English. Hi there. Tony mentioned you still working on Project Lumina. I would love to sync up with you about it. I'm in town next week if you're available. Let me know if that works for you best, Anne. And then you could elaborate it, shorten, or formalize it. Actually, I have some sympathy for busy executives. This actually is kind of useful.
Yeah.
Kind of useful.
I don't know. There's something incredibly, I think, intimate and charming when you get an email back from a very important person and it's written like a caveman where it's like, yes, heard, we'll call later.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Steve Martin
told me, I don't think we should give that up.
Steve Martin told me all the young comics these days embrace autocorrect. So when it makes a hash out of their messages, they don't fix it. They just send it. So he gets all these random, unintelligible messages like that. Sync, working on Lumina still, lunch. and that's...
What did you think of the Steve Martin
I loved it. I loved it. Yeah, it have amazing. You seen it yet?
Yeah, yeah, it's amazing.
So I, as most of you know, because I can't stop bragging about it, I know Steve not super well, but we've had meals together and stuff. And he is every bit the gentleman, the intellectual, but also gentle and uneffacing. He's not the superstar. And they really captured that, I think, very well in the documentary.
There was also a story about him because of the series. And his wife sounds wonderful, too.
Yeah, Anne's great.
His wife, who he met because she was a New Yorker fact checker.
Fact checker, yes.
Fact checking on an article about him. I know all of this because I haven't seen it. But after my dad watched it, he called me and was like, there was a big father-daughter theme and I wanted to call you.
Well, I've had dinner with Anne as well several times. And she's great. She's exactly what you would expect of a New Yorker fact checker. She's intellectual. Yes. She's smart. They're a really interesting couple. And I have also met their child, which I love it. He has, to my knowledge, never said her name in public. And in the documentary, they cover her up with a drawing. He's really protective of her. And he's been very good in his whole life, actually, at avoiding controversy.
Yes.
At preserving his own, protecting his own privacy and his family's privacy. He's done a very good job of it. So I really admire that. I admire him a lot, and not because he's a celebrity or one of the most successful comics of all time, but because he's a really great man. He's a really, you would love him, Jeff. You really would.
Oh, I have no doubt. I have no doubt. And how he reinvented himself multiple times and worked toward a goal is just amazing in the show. Yeah,
he was very lonely. He talks about being in Paris all by himself, going to a movie. He was already the most successful comic of all time. He had made many movies, but he was lonely and sad, and he didn't have any friends. And he went to see all by himself a movie in Paris. And on the screen, I can't remember the movie, but one of the actors says, "Yeah, I want to be the next Steve Martin." And Steve says, "I'm sitting there thinking, no, you don't. No, you don't.
The relationship with his father is just,
isn't that
poignant.
Sad? So poignant.
His father could never give him praise. And
look
who's joined the show.
Love the
she
documentary.
She heard we were talking about parental relationships.
Oh, Gizmo. Hello, Gizmo.
Hi, Giz.
She's a sweetie.
Gizmo, do you want to say something? Nope.
We are, by the way, speaking of Instagram, we're looking at one of those cat litters where they rotate it. The cat gets in and...
I thought you said they were going to be an advertiser on the show, that you're going to be rolling in the automatic cat rollers.
Oh, that's right. What happened to that? I think there's some concern that our cat is too large to get in. I don't know. Maybe not. Fitbit app is rolling out redesigned sleep stats. Thank you, whoever put these in. Suddenly, they have appeared more.
Scooter X. Scooter X put them in the Discord, and I put them in the rundown.
Bless you, too. Fitbit is rolling out redesigned sleep stats. I don't use Fitbit.
Okay.
What more do you need to know?
I love that it tells you how hard you snore.
That's actually very useful because, as you know, sleep apnea is a real health concern.
I just called. I'm going to try to get a travel CPAP machine, which costs $800.
That's messed up.
Not covered by insurance.
Google's Nest Secure is shutting down today because you didn't join the club. You've got options besides ADT with Google's security system officially dead. God, another
what does that
killed
mean?
By Google. So Google's pushing
Jesus,
people
I was about,
to ADT.
I was about to install all this stuff.
You're kidding.
No.
Unbelievable.
Oh, jeez.
You know what? Why would anybody buy another Google product?
Yeah. That's what my son Jake keeps on yelling at me about. Didn't trust them for anything.
So I did not know this, but Google is an investor, a substantial investor, according to The Verge and ADT. So they are going to...
I think they got stock for having sent business their way, too.
Yeah, well, they're going to move you to ADT using your system. I don't know if it uses the hardware. It looks...
I had ADT out, and it's just they overcomplicate everything.
Yeah.
No way.
It is not a straight Nest Secure swap. It's different. So if you have, it's just frustrating. If you have the Google Nest Secure system, you're going to be, you're moving today. Google has.
So it doesn't, you have to replace the hardware or
it sounds like it's requires more than just like, yeah, turn on ADT. Let me see. When it announced it was killing Nest Secure, Google offered its users a free ADT self-setup system worth $485 or $200 credit in the Google Store. That system is that free system offer is valid until May 7th. So if you haven't done it, do it. The ADT self-setup system was launched in March 2023. It has the option of professional monitoring through ADT, or you can monitor it yourself. It integrates with most Nest hardware, including the Nest battery, doorbell, the Nest Hub, and the Nest Cams, and works with Google Home, but it's far from a straight Nest Secure swap, and its integration with Google Home is largely the same as other third-party security systems. So there's a long and, I think, good article, it seems, on The Verge about not only what that would involve to switch to ADT, but what the other options are, including Arlo's home security system, which seems very similar. Adobe has a system. That's interesting.
What do you recommend? Ecobee. Do you recommend a system?
I don't. No, we have a local alarm company.
Yeah,
the guy comes in and goes around. This is Jennifer Patterson Tuohy. So she's of course a regular on Tech News Weekly. So good job on that piece, Jennifer. Google is bringing AI-powered editing tools like Magic Editor to all Google Photos users for free. This is good. We have a picture I took of Lisa when we were in Mexico, and it looks like she's got horns. There's a sculpture
that's
behind
great.
Her that's coming out of her head. And she says, can you get rid of that? And I said, Google can. Haven't done it yet, but yeah. There's, of course, so can Photoshop and many other tools. But the Magic Editor in Google can do it. It'll start rolling out on May 15th, and it's not going to roll out all at once. It'll take a little while. So, you know, keep your eye peeled in your Google Photos. It sounds like it's free. They're not going to charge you. They did charge you with the Google One account earlier, but now it looks like all of this is free. And, Jeff, you'll be able to do it on your Chromebook.
Oh, yay.
Yeah.
Probably not with my account, though.
Yeah, probably not. I wonder if I have Magic Editor yet. I would love to try it on that picture of Lisa, actually. Let me see if... Let's see if I do. First, let me find the picture. There it is. It was kind of unfelicitous. It really are horns coming out of her head.
No, she's a bunny.
She looks like
she's a bunny.
A bunny or a cockroach. Let me see if I have...
Lisa's antennae come out. Yeah,
it really does look like.
It looks like you took a selfie. How did you not notice it?
I missed it somehow. I somehow missed it. Let's see. I don't know if I have. I have a lot of features I see for editing, but I don't know if. Oh, there it
maybe
is.
It's that pencil over there.
Is it the pencil?
Top right.
Pen highlighter.
No highlight. No.
No. It's not.
Yeah. You could draw horns on your head with the pen.
You know what? This to that make us fun. Make us match.
That
be
could
good.
Be good.
Yeah. Oh, too bad. I really would love to have see to show it. You see, I pay for Google One, so these are. You see, it has a little Google One logo on some of the features. HDR.
Just in case you forget.
Let's turn up the HDR. Let's make it pop. Ooh, look at that.
Oh.
Whoa, now she's really looking like a cockroach. Portrait light.
What is that that was behind her?
It was a sculpture. Sky.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Oh, look, you can have luminous, radiant, ember. Oh, look at that. Airy, afterglow, or stormy.
I like afterglow.
You like afterglow?
I think it looks nice.
All right. These are fun. All right. Let's see. What else? What else? But yeah, I don't see the removable tool.
I kind of fundamentally disagree with this feature in Google, though. I think the pictures should be what the pictures are.
Even if you have antennas coming out of your head?
Yeah. It's like a fun little memory of that time you took a photo with your wife and it looked like she had antennas coming out of her head.
Well, I'll keep that, but we'll probably try to make one without it. I did get her to move over. I'm not a complete idiot. I got her to move over in the next one.
But now she's unhappy.
You should
unhappy.
Have done
it
one
the
with
same
you
moment.
Having the antennas behind your head.
Yeah, you that would have been fair. That would have been fair. Maybe I can do it on my Pixel. Probably does use the AI on the Pixel. And there, and that, and what you just heard is the Google Changelog. I think we can wrap this up. We're going on and on and on. We probably should go home. But first, let's get some picks of the week, starting with Paris's Taskmaster.
I've been really getting into Taskmaster Such lately, and so show. I thought I'd just give it a pick. I subscribed. They now have like a streaming service called Taskmaster Super Max Plus, I think is the name of it. And it's just fantastic.
So
for those
tell
who
us
don't
what
know,
this is.
It's a UK-based panel show where essentially the gimmick is you got like five different comedians. They're all on stage. You've got a guy, this guy Greg Davies, who's the Taskmaster. He plays kind of a incredibly strict and punitive persona, and then his assistant little Alex Horn, who's also the creator of the show.
I didn't know that.
He's the creator of the show and writer of all the tasks. And so it's part kind of a live panel show, but then they cut to, you have these five comedians and they're taken out to do different tasks. It could be something as simple as like, get this coconut as far away from here as possible. You have 20 minutes. And all of them are filmed doing this task totally separately. And you're assigned points based on how well you do it. But the tasks sometimes get more or less complicated, and there's often a little ambiguity in how they're worded to allow for like lateral thinking or creative things. It is one of, I think, the funniest shows I've seen. It is just an absolute delight. I'm trying to think of good examples. There was one where I think the task was make as big of a mess as possible. And so you have, you know, three contestants, they have usually five, who are shown like, you know, trashing the studio that they're in, throwing garbage all over. And then they go to like the fourth person and she reads the task and is like, okay, I got this. And immediately calls her sister and says, I've got really terrible news for you. Last week when I was out with your husband, I saw his phone and he's cheating on you.
Oh, jeez.
And proceeds to make a big mess in her family and personal life. And she won the task, you know? She made as big of a mess as possible. Oh, and it's Lord. Just little moments like that where you get to see incredible comedic minds interpret something really creatively that I've really been enjoying
it. I love this show. I mean, it's one of those shows where you just have belly laughs. But I have to also say, I haven't watched it a lot because it raises my anxiety level. You know, they open these instructions and like I get nervous for them.
Yeah, because a lot of them are timed as well. Yeah. And a lot of them don't do well.
Yeah. And I don't,
but I mean, it's
I don't like
over-quick.
The test, but when they go back to the studio and then talk about it, that's very funny. And I love that. But I guess I think this is the case with all competition shows for me. They kind of raise some sort of problem I have in with competition, because
I hate people being made fools of in a way.
No, but that, but they're all.
I mean, I think that's the thing, is they're all willing participants. Yeah. They're all being paid. They're all usually paid comedians, and
it's an opportunity for them to be.
It's
wild.
The biggest, one of the biggest shows in the UK. It's huge.
Where do you through what mechanism do you watch?
You can actually watch every episode free on YouTube. Wow. Just go to Taskmaster on YouTube. They post the current season, I think, is two episodes in, and they'll post it like a day or two after it airs. But I subscribed recently because I don't pay for YouTube Premium, so I wanted to watch it without ads. But it's great. It's all on YouTube. Other pick of the week. Continue.
This is what the young people these days do. They don't watch broadcast television. Yeah. They pay a subscription fee to watch something out of Britain.
That's what all the young people are doing. Yeah. My other pick of the week is less of a pick, more of an experience I would have shared. I, for the second year in a row, did a high school career day at PS47, the American Sign Language Secondary School.
Oh my God.
Manhattan. I originally did this because my friend Paul is a teacher there, a science teacher. And so last year, me and some friends signed up. It was very funny, though, because I get there and they kind of have this all sorted by rooms. And who is the only other person in the journalism room but my colleague at the information, Abe Brown, who also happened to know a teacher there. So this year, Abe and I were like, we're going to do it again. And we kind of had a routine down. You talk to the kids. We do like four or five rounds. But as part of it, we always like to open by asking kids, what do you think journalism is? And where do you get your news from, if anywhere? This year, actually, a lot of them had good answers for what they think journalism is. They were like reporting on current events or, an unbiased perspective on things happening, which was good. One of them said journalism is getting paid to instigate, which I thought was a very funny response. And almost all of them get their news from TikTok. One person said YouTube. Two people said cable news, one of whom was like, my mom puts it on. The other person's like, no, I put it on, which I thought was weird. And one person said the AP, which I thought was good.
The AP, wow.
Yeah, of all the TikTok users, I was asking them, I was like, okay, so who do you follow anybody for news? And no one could really give me a specific answer except for one young lady who said, and I quote, do you remember in SpongeBob, there is a newscaster who's a fish? That's who I get my news from on TikTok. It's someone who uses the SpongeBob fish newscaster to deliver news. And I thought that was really beautiful.
Wow. Wow. I just so think it's so cool that they got to see you. And
I also think it's very funny that these high schoolers only experience 2 years in a row with working journalists are the information.
Yeah. Well, there you go.
There we go. That's my report from the teens.
Information is the new New York Times, the New York Times of the 21st century. That's what it is.
True.
Might as well just face up to it. You are now a superstar. We already did Jeff's pick. I'm sorry to say it was It was that music player. I feel bad. Very cool. Very neat.
That was from Jason.
Do you know the economist Pareto, creator of the Pareto principle, Vilfredo Pareto? No. You know him?
Nope.
Well,
did he write the spaghetti song?
Maybe. You might want to get to know him, because if you play Mario Kart, he could just be your road to victory. This is a crazy site called Mario Meets Pareto. And it turns out in Mario Kart 8, choosing your kart and its attributes can make a massive difference in your ability to win. Did you know this, Benito? It should not just be random. Should you favor speed?
No, because they each have different, like, it's like speed or acceleration or maneuverability or whatever.
Exactly. In fact, here's the various drivers and their speed characteristics. You shouldn't just automatically choose Bowser or Wario. No, no, it's much more complicated than that, because you now you could choose body, tire, glider, speed, acceleration, and really see the trade-offs one after the other.
Yeah, this Matrix has gotten a lot more complicated from the original Mario.
This is eight, right? Yeah, I think in the original one you could choose Wario. Given your play style and skills, you may put more weight on one statistic over the other. Here we go. And you can have a slider and figure out who is your best driver, what's your best body, what's your best tire. This is a really useful tool for anybody.
Moneyballing Mario Kart.
Moneyballing Mario Kart.
I mean, people out there are moneyballing Mario Kart, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sure they are. There's some data points. This he's using something called the Pareto Frontier concept, which allows you to balance the various parameters to optimize for exactly the best ride. So I don't know. This is just kind of cuckoo and crazy and fun. But if you are a Mario Kart racer,
he has to show me himself kicking ass in Mario Kart
before you believe it. Yeah, I mean, he may not even play. For all we know, he doesn't even play Mario Kart, right? But I think it's fun to have all the sliders. In the
Graphs. This could be stolen Mario Valor.
It's from Meyerowitz.io. Meyerowitz.io. But I think if you just Google Mario meets Pareto, you'll probably find what you're looking for. Do you want to play a few more songs from Suno?
I do.
Sure.
I think we should wrap it up with Jeff's pick of the week. SUNO.com. So let's create
maybe something about Mario Kart.
Okay. Yeah, we should maybe combine some of the leitmotifs that appeared in this show. Oh, I think the server is a little
jiggling
jam.
Meat.
Jiggling yeah. Meat. Call screening in the Philippines. Oh, it's going to take a while. Look at that. It's spinning.
Tell us to tell you about ISDN lines.
ISDN lines. Do you remember CompuServe? Mm-hmm. We got to make a song. We definitely have to make a song.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's going to be tonight. Look at that spin.
Yeah.
It is not loading.
Wow. Apparently
it's been discovered. Oh, wait a minute. Here we go. Okay. Let's see. So what's the stuff? First, what's the style? Classic rock? Anthem.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fine.
About ISDN, shaking meat, Mario Kart, CompuServe. What else was in the show today? Elon Musk. And anything else we can add? Say again? AI music. All right. And it's not instrumental. We want lyrics. So we are now generating. You can edit this. Speed it up in post. So we don't. Here you go. It's Rusty Rebel gonna rock this hour, shaking the ground with every beat. We're gonna set this place on fire. Heat it up to her feet. Burning rubber, leave tracks of gold. I don't think there's much of
thinks classic rock is from the 80s.
Yeah.
This doesn't have anything to do with the words.
No, it has nothing to do with any of those.
Okay, but we maybe may need to be a little more specific.
Maybe put about, the words about.
Yeah, about.
Just maybe like go back and then put about the word about.
Shaking meat. What else? ISDN lines.
Shaking meat while playing Mario Kart.
Okay, that's good. Maybe make it simple.
ISDN line.
Okay. Yeah. While playing Mario Kart.
And looking at Instagram ads.
300 baud on Instagram ads. All right, let's try that. Brand new song in the classic rock genre. It's a Wednesday afternoon, 53 degrees in the city. A good afternoon to you. Leo Laporte here, playing the hits on Suno.fm. Coming at you right now, classic
rock anthem we like to call Shake It Up.
Okay, this one's got lyrics.
It does. Yeah, look at the lyrics. I'm a rebel with a controller in my hand, shaking meat like a rock and roll band, playing Mario Kart at 300 baud. Instagram ads got me feeling so flawed. I think it's the theme of this show. It absolutely is.
Oh, come on.
We want to hear
Sumo?
This. Got my joystick moving in a high-speed chase, but these ads be popping up all over the place. We'll trim out the Wow. It's just too popular. That's the problem. I'm going to make this one public because everybody ought to hear. And I'll do the Formaggio e Pepe as well. Make that public. The classic Baroque.
Oh, you can make it. Oh, that's cool.
Yeah. Okay, now let's try Shake It Up, classic rock anthem.
I'm a rebel with a controller in my hand. Oh, it's pop. Shaking me like a rock and roll band. Playing Mario Kart at 300 baud.
Instagram ads got me feeling so flawed. Got my joystick moving.
Flawed. Chase. Got these ads be popping up all over the place. Trying to focus. Trying to steer, but these distractions got me shedding a tear. Damn, flawed.
Is this depressing you, Benito?
No, because this is what pop music sounds like now.
Yeah, this is exactly how they make pop music.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, we've been trained over the years to accept auto tunes and all that stuff. So,
yeah,
and
true.
Poorly programmed drums and all that.
Do you think you can do like Bjork?
Definitely not.
Let's do some Bjork.
Didn't they say that you couldn't have artist names in there?
No. I think it was Pepe that it didn't like.
Oh.
Because of Pepe the Frog, you know.
Oh,
yeah. Duh. Yeah, they didn't want any political content. Let me go back here. I wanted the song.
It does sound like a song that would be playing in an Uber.
It's totally modern pop music. Sad to say,
just as disposable as modern pop music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. As disposable.
Yeah.
Still, pretty good for an AI, right?
Pretty good.
Yeah. Pretty good.
Yeah, pretty impressive.
Pretty good.
Pretty good.
We gather round the kitchen from dusk till dawn. With flour and eggs, we create a mound. Eating and rolling with passion profound.
There's a chorus. They all have chef's hats on.
They're removing them and putting them back on somberly.
But it's the simple magic that steals the show. Wow. These are truly incredible.
Cheese and pepper.
The heart of Rome, where artisans of pasta find their home. I set the stage with flour, eggs, and water to create a dish that's beyond all borders. All the cheese, all the pepper, mixed together in perfect measure, with every strand of pasta that we twirl. An Italian masterpiece that will make your taste buds swirl.
I love it. I think these are really amazing.
They're really good.
Yeah, I've used up all my credits, though. I might have to subscribe.
I think it's really amazing in that it sounds
it was
like
for a good cause.
Oh, yeah. It did not like the style of Bjork. It said you can't use a name. So
I was going to say, when it said Pepe, it was like the artist Pepe.
Oh,
it wasn't doing
it
because of Pepe the Frog.
Okay. So what's a style, a weirdo style? Anarcho-Christian rock?
Progressive metal.
Bjork? Oh, you can't do Bork. Yeah.
You like progressive metal. Let's do progressive metal.
Jazz fusion.
Oh, that sounds boring. I like progressive metal. Let's do that. Progressive jam band. We want Umphrey's. Let's see how close to Umphrey's we can get. Use breakbeat electro, says Burke. Well, first we're going to play.
Burke really wants it.
First we're gonna play the one with all the horns?
Mechanical Carnage. Oh, yeah. Ska's good. I love ska. Here's here's Mechanical Carnage.
Jesus.
Okay, I think you were right, Burke. The lyrics on this were dystopian realm where violence and chaos unite, shaking meat, burning rubber, let the mayhem ignite. Mario Kart at 300 baud, pixels zapping through the night. Instagram ads flicker. We rise in the face of the flight.
With anger. With anger.
Yeah, well, break beat electro. Oh, I've used up my credits. Ah!
You used your credits, yeah.
I wasted them in Mechanical Carnage. That's not progressive metal. That's Metallica.
That's just straight metal, yeah.
That's straight metal.
Burke is melting down in the chat that you didn't use, you didn't get to break beat.
I'm
going to
pay for it. I'll do it right now, real quickly. let's see. Basic plan, 50 credits a day. Well, that's enough. I just used up my credits active. Okay. Do I have more credits now? I do. I got more credits just by clicking that button. So let me go back and we're going to get your breakbeat electro, Burke. Oh, we have to wait for our other generations to finish. I have many generations going. I have definitely used up my credits here. All right. Let's have, let everybody go. I know, Burke, you don't ask for much, and I will do that for you. Is that your favorite genre? Breakbeat electro. Burke, do it yourself. Yeah, you can do it, you know, Suno.com. Thank you, everybody, for joining us. Thanks to Paris Martineau, theinformation.com. She's working hard on a secret story, but you can give her tips at Paris Martin. Actually, no, at Martineau01 on Signal. Just no at Martineau.
That's true. Just Martineau
01 on Signal or at Paris Martineau on the Twitter or everywhere else. And Jeff Jarvis is the Town Knight Professor for Journalistic Integrity, author of, oh, there it is, the galley.
The galleys.
There she
the galleys.
Is.
The web we weave.
Moral Panic is on the cover.
Oh. It is.
Drink.
With alliteration.
Wow. WWW. Oh, I get it. I got to read it and give you your log roll. I will work on that tonight.
Thank you.
He is also the author of the Gutenberg Parenthesis and magazine. You're become, you know what? I credit this show with your prolific authorizations because
you need to stick around so I can promote the next damn book.
Yeah,
please.
I will. We're going to stick around just so you can promote the book. Simon Schuster or whatever should fund this show. That's what should happen.
Basic books.
I keep waiting for some big corporate entity or, I don't know, Lorene Powell Jobs to come along and say, you know, Twit's a good thing. Here's $50 million. Yeah. Just keep going. And then we would just keep going, and we wouldn't have to be begging you all the time. I hate the begging. Jeff Jarvis is a professor of journalism at Craig Newmark.
It's okay.
Journalism.
Newmark.
At the City University of New York. And he is, of course, not going to be here next week because he's on his way to Perugia, Italia. But we're going to...
Where I can eat.
Where you can eat. Cacio e pepe. Who do we know who's going to be sitting in yet? Yeah, we've asked Stacy, but we've also asked a few other people, Glenn Fleischman.
We don't know yet.
We don't know yet. We haven't heard back, but... We will have probably one or two people to sit in for you, Jeff.
You'll probably have to have two to replace me.
Yes. We found the cards. They were in my office. Ladies and gentlemen, he is the director, formerly, the director of the Town Knight Center for Entrepreneurial Journalism at the Craig Newmark Graduate School of Journalism at the City University of
Newmark.
Hey, Craig.
An encore.
You know, we could name this the Craig Newmark foundation for podcasting excellence.
Do you think Craig would sponsor the show?
We could do that? It. Craig, you want to hear this every Wednesday? Just, you know.
We have a lot of takes that you'll love to have your name on.
Yeah. We play your song all the time, Craig, all the time. No, I don't want to. I'm not going to beg anybody personally, but you can join the club, Craig. It's only $7. Twit.tv/club twit. We will be back next Wednesday. I'll be doing it from Mom's house.
Get some pigeon members.
Yeah, get some pigeons. Mom has pigeons, but we will be here Wednesday afternoon, 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern. That is 2100 UTC. You can watch us do it live on YouTube, youtube.com/twit. Download the shows after the fact on twit.tv/twig. Subscribe in your favorite podcast player. That's probably the best idea. That way you get it automatically. I thank all our club members for your great support. And thanks to all of you for listening. We'll see you right here next time on This Week in Google.
Where artisans of pasta find their home, I set the stage with flour, eggs, and water to create.